It's like the yin and the yang and the yin.
Judiciary Safety and General Services, we are now convening. I would like to announce that item number 11 is withdrawn. And procedurally, we will defer item number 2 to the next meeting, and I will announce something later about item number 2. Item number 1, please. Oh, okay.
Have a roll call. Professor Jurcic?
Here.
Fleischman?
Here.
Hazard?
Here.
Barber?
Here.
Wright?
Justus.
Spittle?
Present.
Mr. Chair?
Here.
We have a quorum present.
Thank you very much. Supervisor Rice, I'm going to state that this is the first committee meeting that he is missing. Desmond, since his tenure here, so I want to make a note of that. Item number 1, please.
Item number 1, from the county executive appointing Ms. Carol Wickman to the Milwaukee County Ethics Board. Ms. Wickman's term will expire February 28, 2014.
Thank you, Ben. Good morning, Ms. Wickman.
Good morning, Chairman and Supervisors. Tia Tohorst from the County Executive's Office. It's my pleasure today to be before you to bring forth Carol Wickman, that has been nominated by the League of Women Voters to serve on the Ethics Board. As you know, there is a rotating process that nonprofits appoint people to the Ethics Board. While we are not directly appointing Mrs. Wickman, it is a recruitment process. We have both been very impressed during conversations we've had with her. That we wanted to talk about her past experiences and what she thought she would bring to the board. So not only are we thrilled that the League of Women Voters nominated her, but we feel very confident that she will do a fabulous job in her position at the Ethics Board.
Supervisor Susan.
I'll defer to Supervisor Susan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, it's a great pleasure that I nominate the approval of this nomination and hope that the committee would join me in approving this and bring it to the full board. Full disclosure, Ms. Wickman and I come from the same community, both Hills Corners and our parish community at St. Mary's, so it's a double pleasure to recognize her long list of accomplishments as well as nomination for League of Women Voters and the expertise that she'll bring to the board. So, for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor.
I'm just wondering if this is your retirement job.
No, I'm standing my full-time retirement job. But yes, I have gotten more active. I was on a board of directors of the league. I've done this. I've run for self-made St. Mary's Council. I guess you could say that.
I'm sure the remuneration will be worth it.
I don't think there is any.
But thank you for your time and efforts, and I have very respect for the League of Women Voters.
Thank you, yes.
We have a motion for approval for item number one. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
On the motion to approve, Supervisor Sturzbeck?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Ethers?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So with 6 ayes, 0 noes, the motion is approved.
Thank you. As I indicated earlier, item 2, because of the length of item 2 as relates to the deliberation, that will be deferred until the end of the meeting. Item number 3.
Item number 3, from the Director of the Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report providing an update on consent group activities regarding the possible transfer of management of inmate mental health and health care services to DHHS. This item was also referred to the Committee on Health and Human Needs. It is informational only and then otherwise directed by the committee.
Director Cologne.
Chairman Johnson, good morning, and members of the committee, thank you. In 2012, the budget passed an amendment that required the Department of Health and Human Services and the Sheriff's Office to provide recommendations on the possible transfer of the inmate medical unit to the Department of Health and Human Services. The work group that was tasked to provide these recommendations include Department of Health and Human Services, the Sheriff's Office, the Department of Administrative Services, and Corporation Counsel. We had our first meeting in January, we provided a report in January to the board indicating the goals and the objectives of the work study group, and we also put a plan in place over the next 6 months that will allow us to provide some recommendations to the board sometime in June. We had our first meeting in February, pretty much to have an orientation and to go over some data that was requested by the Department of Health and Human Services. One of the things we realized in reviewing that data, there was about 50% of the inpatients there that had some type of medical or mental health need. Within that meeting, the Sheriff's Office indicated to us that they were going to issue an RFP. And at that time, it was February 7th, they indicated that that would happen in 14 days. We have not heard from them more after that meeting in terms of the RFP and when it was going to be issued, but they did mention that within the meeting. We are going to continue to meet with the sheriff and the rest of the task force to continue to provide recommendations unless the board tells us we should not. But our next meeting is going to be March 28th, and prior to that meeting on March 22nd, we're going to be taking tours of the facilities and have meetings with the sheriff's office on that day. It's going to be kind of a full-day event. And then at our next meeting, we'll have some discussions regarding the tour and also some more specific discussions on previous reports that have on accreditation issues and so forth. So,
thank you, Director. Director, it's my recollection that when the 2012 budget deliberations occurred, the sheriff could indicate that his expertise lie in law enforcement. And I thought it was basically a consensus by the board and by the parties who testified in front of us that we would look toward the provision of medical services and mental health services by the Department of Health and Human Services. Am I missing something?
Yes, that is correct. But they mentioned that there could be we would work with the sheriff's office and others in a task group to provide recommendations for the possible transfer to us. But there could be other options as well.
any questions, concerns? Back to the members. Inspector Smith, would you like to say something?
Morning.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Committee, Inspector Rich Smith, Sheriff's Office. First, I want to say that Mr. Cole has been extremely responsive. He's kept in touch. I think, are starting a good relationship, which, of course, is excellent, so I appreciate his work. He did mention the RFP. That has not been published yet, which is, of course, why notification hasn't been made at this point. As we discussed at that meeting, Dr. Ronald Shansky, who is the medical monitor for the Christensen Consent Decree, has yet to complete his staffing plan. We were in contact with him this week, and he anticipates that that should be done by the end of this week or first part of next week. So until we get that staffing plan, there's no sense to put the RFP out because it wouldn't be properly set up. So that it's just the status on that, which I thought you might like to know. Thank you.
I would like to ask that. Thank you. I know that Dr. Shansky present. He was not present. He was present at the meeting.
At the meeting. Yes.
Okay. It was for the MH representative back by council. I think. Was there a representative there?
I'm sorry, by Corporation Council?
No. Legal Aid Society.
Pete Knesset. Oh, no. Not at the meeting that we had.
Because he has expressed concerns about the provision of medical and medical services. Okay. Any other questions, comments? This is an informational meeting. Item, I should say. And the next meeting will be March 28th?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll be very much interested in finding out what happened.
Okay. Thank you.
Item number four.
Item number four, from the Office of the Sheriff, requesting authorization to execute a professional services contract with the Transition Service Government Programs for the processing of inmate claims.
Thank you. I want to note that Ms. Janelle Jensen, any clerk for this committee, and this is her first time actually being in charge. I hope we give her respect and cooperate to the extent that we can. This is her first day.
I didn't charge his guy.
Well, Inspector Smith, Mr.
Preeby. Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, I'm going to turn this particular item over to Mr. Preeby.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're seeking a contract with Wisconsin Physician Services for processing inmate medical bills. In the past, we utilized GAMP and then the Office on Aging to process these bills for us. But at the beginning of 2011, position was transferred from the Office on Aging back to the Sheriff's Department, and we are now processing those bills ourselves. So now Central Accounts Payable has indicated that we need to enter into the contract with WPS for this processing ourselves, since we are submitting the bills directly from the Sheriff and aren't coming from the Office on Aging. So we need to have that contract basically transferred over to the title of the Sheriff's.
Supervisor Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I'm kind of wondering about this, does this raise any potential conflict with services perhaps going over to DHHS? What's the length of the contract, I guess? I think I read that in here. But
it's through 2013, but again, there is the 30-day out clause.
Oh, there is an out clause. Yes. Good. That's what I was wondering. And it is not renewable, in other words, by either party necessarily?
We would have to go through the process.
You have to go through. Thank you.
With regard to the cost per claim, is this similar to what had been paid by the Department of Aging, was it?
Yes, it's the same contract. We just changed that it's between the sheriff's office and WPS as opposed to the office.
So same rates,
yes.
No change here.
No change.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Lexman.
Fine, thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'd like to keep a couple of.
Thank you, Supervisor. Any questions? Further questions, concerns? Regarding the matter? Not now, Clerk, would you please call?
On the motion to approve, Supervisors Jurcik?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Ezars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The item is approved. Item number five from the Office of the Sheriff requesting authorization to execute a professional services contract with Telepsych Inc. to provide psychiatric services for inmates at the county correctional facilities.
Mr. Chairman. This is a rather unique contract that we're looking to enter into. I think I used the word progressive on this particular one. We have, and as this committee is well aware, we've been very much struggling with getting full-time qualified psychiatrists within the correctional facilities. Just to state where we're at right now, we have a full-time psychiatrist down at our South facility, Dr. Holloway. We have a part-time psychiatrist that we recently hired that is working at the Central facility, and a couple of nurse practitioners who are also psychiatric trained. Biggest issue we have, in which Dr. Shansky, our medical monitor, has been concerned about, is that we don't have enough psychiatric coverage, specifically at our downtown jail, where we do have a large percentage, if you will, of individuals with acute mental ill problems and those that may not be as acute, but still a significant population, as also Mr. Cologne referred to in a previous item. So the proposal is this. I've spent much time with Dr. Shansky on this issue as to what to do. I've contacted other agencies within Milwaukee County, including BHD, who at this particular time have an overload of their own. They're not able to supply us with even a part-time person at this point. So based on the totality of the circumstances, Dr. Shansky recommended that a company called Telepsych, which is in the Milwaukee area, they have branches around the country, but specifically one that's located on Lisbon Avenue, which is run by an individual named David Dropkin. We met up with him, went through what is being proposed as a telepsychiatry. In essence, what this does is cameras are put in the jail, sound systems are put in. It's literally like having what you may be more familiar with as video court. They interview the inmates. They can literally do the complete gamut of evaluations, medications, and recommendations that may be needed for treatment. What we are proposing is at this time a one-year contract with a 45-day out clause. Again, should something materialize with either DHD or Department of Health and Human Services or something different, then we can terminate this contract. Corp Counsel's reviewed it. Risk Management has reviewed this. DBE has reviewed the concepts. So we're asking for the board's support to move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Inspector. Inspector, I think it was just to ask Inspector Clayton, are the cameras in place? Was this teleconference?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, good morning. Kevin Klevich, Deputy Inspector with the Sheriff's Office. The cameras have been ordered and purchased, and we're waiting for them to be delivered and installed by IMA.
Thank you. Supervisor Weishaupt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I see here is also there's the extension for up to two additional one-year periods and for potential contract of 3 years. I'd like to scale that back. I just don't. I can understand us going into a contract for the short term, but any extension of the contract, I think, should come before the Judiciary Committee and the County Board, and we make an adjustment at that time. It would be on line 51. Let's just strike extended up to additional 1 year period for a total of 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, suggesting if you strike everything following February 28, 2013.
Correct. That would be then line 50 to end maybe.
So Supervisor, you would quit a period after 2013?
That's correct. And if we need to extend the contract, they can come back before the county board and ask for that.
Supervisor Driscoll.
Who are the principals at Telepsych?
I'm sorry?
Who are the professionals behind this camera? Who are we talking about?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, I'm sorry. I misunderstood the question at first. There's two psychiatrists that are licensed in Wisconsin that will be the individuals behind the cameras, if you will. So they're licensed psychiatrists that will be doing the evaluations.
Do we have names?
No. If this helps, those individuals must, before we'll actually enact the contract, all these individuals have to pass our background check first, even though they're not going to be physically in the building. At that time, we'll make sure that their licenses are up to date, good, there's no history, and so forth.
I can't speak for my colleagues, but I'm certainly not going to approve a contract, and I don't know who we're talking about. Let me ask this question. Does Dr. Shansky have any financial interest in Telepsych?
Mr. Chairman, not to my knowledge.
But you're not, you don't know?
I've never breached that question, no.
I think we should get answers to those questions. I certainly want answers to those questions before I'm willing to vote on this. I'd like to know who we're talking about. All right, I'm willing to do that temporarily over. Perhaps I can get some answers to us.
Mr. Chairman, I think with one phone call we can get that information.
Okay. So let's put some gentlemen on.
Yes.
So first, I'm just saying it would be the
subject. We have an amendment. Supervisor Weishaupt has proposed an amendment. Do you want to just lay a little bit? Jump a little bit?
That would be fine if we lay the entire item over temporarily and then take up the amendment on it.
Temporarily lay over that. This is an objection. We would have to vote. Temporarily lay over. Okay. Item number six.
Item number six from the Office of the Sheriff, requesting authorization to execute a professional services contract with CenturyLink Correctional Communication Services for the provision of inmate phone service at the county correctional facility. On February 2nd, 2012, this item was referred by the board.
Mr. Chairman, this particular item has been before this committee and also through county board. I guess at this juncture, we'll be happy to answer any questions to clear up any potential confusion or issues that you may have. Otherwise, I'll await those.
Yes,
Supervisor. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had some concern when I read this, and I think I expressed that at the last time this was before us, concerning inmate communications becoming a profit center for the Sheriff's Department. Could you perhaps explain the justification for the practice?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, I guess the simple answer to this is that it is a revenue stream. There's no doubt about that. In the budget that the county that the county exec put forth, there's a $1.8 million revenue line specific from telephone revenue. It's something that, as judiciously put as I can, it was approved through the county board process. It's in our budget, and therefore we have pursued a contract again that meets that revenue stream, which quite frankly is expected in our budget. So it's not technically quote-unquote a fundraising thing for the sheriff's office. It's basically to keep our budget within the means that the county board had approved. I hope that helps.
Mr. Chair?
Supervisor?
That sounds like a fundraising operation, regardless of the rationale offered. And if this was standalone, I guess I'd feel differently, but in light of attempts to charge Uber inmates for parking, to manipulate electronic surveillance inmates for purposes that justify budget priorities, I'm a little dubious about this as a practice on the part of the Sheriff's Department. It seems to me the people who are incarcerated are probably the people who are least able to afford this kind of communications charge. And while I understand, and I did some research, had some help on the issue, that communications with legal counsel and so on are provided, and that's free of charge if I'm not mistaken. This, it seems to me, puts a burden on people who can ill afford it and who benefit greatly from their ability to stay in touch with their families, their children. So I understand this, and I'm ambivalent about it, but in the last analysis, I just don't think I can reasonably vote for it.
I'd like to know what is the procedure in the in correctional facilities south particularly, but also in the jails, when an inmate comes in with a cell phone. What is the procedure?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, cell phones are not allowed within the facility. It is literally, this has been an issue of national attention. Cell phones, when have been used and have been proven to be used in case study and so forth for investigative practices to be a problem for escapes, individuals getting cell phones that quite frankly shouldn't have phone contact and so forth. So any cell phone that comes in is put in an inmate's property, correspond release, they receive it back.
And I can respect the concerns that the sheriff's office is expressing, but would there be an opportunity for a use of a cell phone while being monitored to avoid the costs that are being charged here?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, to answer the question, anything is possible. I guess I'd like to go back to, if I may, some of the issues that revolve around this whole issue. Across the country, isn't even what I'm going to point to. I'm just going to point to issues right here in Wisconsin as far as what inmate phone bills or what inmates are charged. And again, if you look at this, the majority of calls outside are collect calls. So yes, the families are impacted, but it's not the inmates themselves paying for these phone calls. Sheboygan County, $6 per call. Brown County, $5.75 per call. Milwaukee County, $5.55 per call. A little bit lower is Racine County at $5 per call. And then not only are we within, if you will, the mean, calls for debit calls, which the inmates could do either through their inmate accounts where family members and so forth can also put money in. Those calls are $3.30 per call, which is literally below the numbers that I read. La Crosse County was the least expensive county we found for collect calls at $4.45, and if they can do the debit card, we're at $3.30. Gary Kozak happens to be here. I don't know if anyone's interested in hearing his testimony from CenturyLink. There is a massive amount of equipment that is put into our facilities in order to get inmates the phone calls that they need. Just very quickly, some of the things that will take place with this contract is we have 196 phones at the South that will be replaced with pedestals, 136 phones and pedestals at Central, new servers and storage devices for the phone calls themselves at both facilities, new technologically advanced software platform will be installed, as well as was mentioned, the public defender calls are still there, and other items that can enhance for the inmate. So it's understood this is not an inexpensive way for inmate phone calls. However, again, and I have to come back respectfully to what's in our budget. It's budgeted that, if you will, this revenue materializes, and if that is not the case, I quite frankly don't know how to answer how that revenue is going to be generated. Thank you.
Thank you. With respect to the calls, the charges of 550 and 330, those rates have been in place how long?
9 years.
Rates have been in place for 9 years. And the sheriff's office is operating under an emergency contract. The contract is in place?
Yes.
So does everybody understand what the respect to the emergency contract with that does? Because at least temporarily they want to know. So the question is, I guess the underlying issue is the commission rate. Is that what the, since the calls themselves as it relates to what the inmates have been charged has not change for 9 years. This is the 10th year. I'm trying to understand what is that issue with great much.
I'm happy to address it. It seemed to me the motivation, in part at least, for this new contract was upping the percentage of revenue that the Sheriff's Department would receive. That doesn't in any way relieve my concern about the burden this places on generally poor families, in so many cases poor families. I find it troubling, and I think that, you know, if there was a system of the disposable cell phones, they could be purchased and used under supervision or some alternative. I think there may be other ways of doing this that would relieve those burdens.
Okay, I'll move denial.
Supervisor Terzic, if I may just make it easier for the vote totals, I'll be glad to move approval of the item.
Okay. I'll withdraw my motion. I just made it to get something on the table.
Right. I understood. That's fine. Thank you. I just give our clerk a little bit of a break.
It's part of the piece.
No, he's raising supervisor question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as a project, if that's a concern, is it appropriate to have staff research national models and other places that might use a disposable phone system and lay the item over and somebody use the information back, you know, if that's an appropriate way to go. Or
I'd certainly be open to that, but, you know, I don't know if it falls on staff or perhaps the Sheriff's Department, given their intimate understanding of their needs.
I think it might be appropriate if there's a discussion about the fairness to the inmates that might be disenfranchised and not be able to pay $5.50 for a phone call. I mean, I'm pretty pissed about the situation. So I don't feel strongly one way or the other, but if there is some conversation about this kind of thing, maybe we need to. I mean, if it's under emergency contract anyway, if we can study on the bottoms and see what could be more cost efficient or for the inmates to still help the sheriff with their revenue stream.
Thank you, Supervisor. Could we ask accounting experts here what impact would be of any delay here? Obviously, it sounds like if this could be executed, it would be a modernization, increase in technology, installation of new equipment. What's the impact if we're potentially entertaining the option of delaying this and working only under an existing emergency contract? Is there an ability to quantify what the dollar impact would be to budget?
You said, that's what you said, accounting experts, are you
sure? The Sheriff's Department, I think they're present.
The difference in the commission rates at 51.3% versus the 67.9% is roughly $30,000 per month.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. $30,000 per month. Again, we've been told that the rate set for the inmates have not changed since 2002. Unless statistics over at least the past year, that the number of inmates in our facilities have declined. So unless all of a sudden there's a great burst of crime to which inmates have to be in the jail and eventually get adjudicated and go to the soft facility, I still think it's something we have to provide for, given that the budget is what it is. I'm just trying to recount some of what was said earlier.
Supervisor Biddle indicated that maybe there could be studies models that could be brought forth.
I mean, if they're under emergency contract, service already being provided.
Yes.
If you don't have to go longer-term contract, if you want to study other models that can, I guess, serve both needs. It seems like there's a feeling on the floor that in this committee that might be unfair to the inmates. And obviously, they have some revenue issues. Maybe we can actually work together on this.
And if they're, and keep in mind that
while not working together,
unless we have an emergency meeting, then the composition of this committee is going to be different based on these agreements. Mr. Gray?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make the comment that the Sheriff's Office came to the Corporation Counsel's Office to talk about this issue. And I want to tell you that what I told them is that the Sheriff does have an obligation, constitutional obligation, to provide phone services to inmates. And so he had to do something. And this is what he is proposing to do. And so I understand whether you can prove it or not is up to you, but I would suggest that you not deny it because it puts us in a rather awkward situation. I think the Sheriff does need to do something. He's made a choice. If you want to study it further, certainly that makes sense. If you want to look at revenue from the 2013 budget, because this revenue is already built into this budget, it makes sense. If you don't want to put your approval on this, let it continue as a 30-day, month-to-month contract,
That's fine. But just know that the sheriff has to do something. This is what he's doing.
Thank you.
That's great.
Just one question for Mr. Gray. A motion to deny would not change the emergency contract that's under current use. Is that correct?
I mean, the sheriff still has an obligation to provide service, and so I'm not sure what the effect of the service on a motion to deny.
I mean, you can both win and lose a motion to deny, just like you can win and lose a motion to approve. But my understanding is whatever we do, if we don't reach a conclusion on this, there's an emergency contract that's going forward until we get something figured out.
Yep.
That's a good question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just that by denying this, all I would say is we do not like this contract. It doesn't stop a new contract from being developed that we would like. So, the 30-day contract is still in effect. If we want to refer it to staff for investigation, and we can take it up at the next cycle, it wouldn't affect anybody's communications with their family or council. So it seems to be the pleasure of the board. I'll make a motion to refer the item to staff for further investigation on rates and service structure. The Milwaukee County Board
System.
Supervisor Weisshaw moves to refer this item to County Board staff on rates and service structure. That's what we have before us. Any further comments, questions? Madam Clerk, this council on the motion to refer.
On the motion to refer back to staff, Supervisors Jurczyk?
Aye.
Weisshaan?
Aye.
Cesar?
No.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
No.
4 ayes, 0 noes. Okay, 2 noes. The item is approved.
Referred.
Thank you.
Sure.
Inspector.
Sorry for interrupting. The information whenever you're ready has been obtained regarding the telesite contract.
Okay, let's return to item number 5.
And Inspector, form us, please.
Mr. Chairman, the supervisors, Dr. Isaac Nagel, who has been with Telepsych for 2.5 years. The other person is Rose Presser, also been with Telepsych for 1 year. Dr. Shansky was also contacted, and he has no financial interest or benefit from the approval of this contract.
Thank you, Inspector.
I was interested in that Dr. Transky recommended this firm. Why is it we haven't utilized the RFP process?
It says that he's writing in support. I don't think.
No, it was stated during testimony that that Dr. Shansky recommended David Dropkin of Telepsych as a provider. It almost sounds like a sole source, you know, and I'm just wondering why the RFP wasn't used in the first place.
If I may, it was strictly a matter of time. We are walking on the edge of being in violation of Christensen by not having psychiatric services, by going through an RFP process just for this, we delayed it many months, and we would continue in violation or near violation of this. So in working with Dr. Shansky, he made a suggestion on how we could get in compliance quickly. Which is why we did not put in the RFP process. The other aspect of it, we're in the middle of working with BHE for changing the entire operation. The RFP for this model, which is a few months' time, while we look at the bigger issues, perhaps turning everything over to BHD, we just basically follow Dr. Shansey's advice that we need to move quickly and bring these people in.
That is helpful. Understanding that there are probably numerous potential contractees here who could have been, you know, if we had contacted three or five to get some sense of what they were charging prior to bringing this forward, I think that could have been done in a more informal way than maybe a formal RFP, even within the time constraints. But I understand the explanation, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any questions, concerns?
How do you spell Dr. Rose Presser's last name?
Mr. Chairman, supervisor, it's P-R-E-S-S-E-R.
Question. Have you all, in the efforts to have Marcel Lighthouse, was there any discussion about trying to increase salaries? Everybody we've done to be reclassified and increase the pay to try to find one of the talent?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, actually that very issue is being run through Human Resources as we speak. Our original understanding, which unfortunately was incorrect, was that that same pay scale would also apply to our psychiatrists. In retrospect, it did not, so that will come before personnel in short order.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just remind the committee we do have the amendment to strike the language. Line 50, 51. And if we could, of course, take that up prior motion to us.
Okay.
So, Beth Washington has reminded us of
the amendment for the period after 2015.
Any questions, concerns about that amendment?
Madam President, would you please call the roll on Supervisor Weishaupt's amendment?
On the motion for the amendment, Supervisor Sturcic?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Spizars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
No.
5 ayes, 1 no. The item is approved as amended.
Oh.
Sorry, the amendment passes.
On the resolution as amended, Supervisor Weishaupt.
At this time, I'd like to move approval as amended.
Questions, concerns, comments? Critical information.
On the motion as amended, Supervisor Sturcic?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Spizars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
The item is approved as amended, 6-0.
Thank you. Item number
number 7 from the Office of the Sheriff requesting authorization to apply for and accept and awarded grant funding of $32,000 to provide 2 tactical team leader courses provided by the National Tactical Officers Association.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, first thank you for indulging us on the last item. Appreciate that. This particular item is a $32,000 grant. There's no local match on it, basically because the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office SWAT team is the coordinator for the regional SWAT teams. This grant was specifically assigned to the Sheriff's Office to host train for the regional SWAT teams. This training includes, as should be on your outline, active shooter training, barricaded situations, hostage rescue, as well as leadership development. So there's $32,000, of which $4,000 is for the actual lodging and meals for the individuals that will be attending. The other $20,000 is for the actual classes themselves. We will have as the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office will have a part of the classes. There will be 2 specific ones, 30 officers each. And again, this is designed through the Regional Aligned Law Enforcement Response Team, which also acronym for ALERT. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Biddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Where will these courses be held?
Yeah, it's where.
It's at Boat Field, wherever Boat Field might be.
And spot, comfy food, wherever. Are we going on vacation? It's just like a real thing. I've never been there. I don't know.
Chairman. Here. There we go. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Bulk Field is a international guard base. It is definitely not a spot.
Thank you, Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Will sheriff deputies from Milwaukee be participating in this?
Chairman, Supervisor, yes. A minimum of 4 officers from our agency will attend both training.
Will they be charged in overtime to participate?
My SWAT commander, the answer is no.
Approval, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor's approval of item number 7. A performance item number 7.
I'm tempted.
Thank you, Supervisor.
Please go ahead. On the motion to approve, Supervisor Jurczyk?
Aye.
Weishan?
Aye.
Caesar?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The item is approved.
Perhaps we actually have a special grant here that is
not acceptable.
Item number 8.
Item number 8 from the Office of the Sheriff, submitting notification of an amendment to a professional services contract with Attic Correctional Services to provide alcohol and other drug abuse treatment and cognitive intervention classes at the County Correctional Facility South. This item is informational only and thus otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn the mic over to Mr. Freeby.
So, the 2012 adopted budget included tax levy funding of $42,000 for a lot of services from the Attic Correctional Services, but it also included language that we could pursue additional grant funding and come back to the committee if we're successful. We have been awarded an additional grant, $24,000. There's a match of $8,000, but the $42,000 satisfies the match requirement. I'm just informing you that that has occurred, and we'll be coming back in the future with fund transfers to recognize the grant and include the increase in expenditure authority to offset by the grant revenue.
Thank you. Mr. Griffey, any questions?
providing this information. Item number nine.
Item number nine from the Office of the Sheriff, submitting an informational report regarding the issue of absentee ballots at county correctional facilities. This item is informational only, unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Good morning, Inspector Bailey.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Inspector Edward Bailey, on behalf of Sheriff Clark, I'm joined by Major Nancy Evans, a local media star, saw her earlier this week on television. Mr. Chair, you have an informational report that was requested from the Office of the Sheriff in regards to inmate voting. I'll characterize it simply by saying that Wisconsin, in a true expression of progressivism, is on the forefront of allowing inmates to vote. It is easiest to understand the very limited inmates that may not vote. That's how progressive they are. Essentially, the only inmates that are truly prevented from voting are convicted felons during their period of incarceration while they're on parole or on probation. Otherwise, inmates that are not able to attend to the polling places are generally allowed the right to vote. It's a right afforded by the Registrar's Office and the Election Office. I gave you in the report the process that we use and a little bit of the law. I did run the numbers last night in preparation for my appearance this morning to give you an idea of the scope that we're talking about. We generally use the number 3,000 for our inmate footprint, plus or minus 3,000, but that's a baseline number. At our central facility, we'd be looking in the area of 160 inmates. Those are inmates that are identified as being in custody in categories that I presume would enjoy the right to vote. I think that number may skew high because I haven't looked at each individual inmate to see if they may be on probation or parole for a felony that they're not currently in custody for, and I would estimate that at around 30%. At our south facility, we'd be looking around 500. It's actually 540, and again, I think that number skews high, maybe by a factor of 30%. Primarily, those are people that are in custody as misdemeanor pretrials, misdemeanor sentenced, municipal commitments, misdemeanor violation of probation, and arrested felons that have not been adjudicated as guilty, so pretrial felons. So that's, I suppose, the limit of my additional information in the report. I'm going to have to answer any questions.
Inspector, excuse me, Major, do you have anything to add?
No, unless you have questions.
Questions? Supervisors.
We've just had a primary date. Do you have any statistics for us on how many inmates participated, how many requested ballots?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Supervisor. I don't have the numbers. I can certainly find them out. I am unaware of any. I will say that our greatest experience in inmate voting is obviously in presidential and gubernatorial elections. I'm largely unfamiliar with it in primary elections. I will say that I was aware that this came to the committee, I think, as a request from one of your sister legislators. And in discussing this matter with the sheriff in preparation for my testimony today, one of the things the sheriff was certainly saying is if any member of the board or any recognized voter registration group wanted to work within our facilities, he certainly is amenable to that. It would be run through the Office of Major Evans with simply the stipulation that anybody coming to our detention facility would have to go through the same security screening, including a very straightforward minor background screening that any of our volunteer members would. Thanks. Thank you.
I appreciate that offer. I think that's a great offer, and I would just ask, is Major Evans, would you be willing to make a phone call to the League of Women Voters and see if they'd be willing to play that role?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, yes.
Thank you. If someone doesn't have an ID, they can be given a provisional ballot. Did any of that take place on the primary voting day?
You can answer if you know. I'm just unaware of any in the primary election, so I'm not aware of any specifics. I'm unaware of any actual voting information.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, there were zero requests for the primary election. Thus far, for the April election, we only have two. There are signs posted in every housing unit. They are told about it in the orientation speech at the end of each day. We have made provisions to allow family members to drop off IDs, which we will make copies of. So we are definitely willing to cooperate with this process.
Okay, appreciate that. I mean, if ballots are requested and you have individuals from multiple municipalities, I would assume, and municipalities can all have different kinds of ballots. So, it could require some effort to get the ballots from the correct jurisdiction. I assume that they're not using the address of the House of Correction. Am I correct in that assumption? That they retain their place of residence?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor, we have centralized it because you've hit on a key issue. It's an important right, but it's a right that has to be closely guarded. So we have literally one command staff member who with all of the process funnels through to keep that close control. She will work with the electoral offices in both the home area and Franklin to make sure that only one ballot is being cast and it's being cast in the right location. The real answer to your question is it's a matter of pre-conviction or post-conviction, so there are some intricacies to it, and that's why it's important for us that we have it funneled through one operational member.
It doesn't surprise me that no one requested a ballot in the last primary. We had very low voter turnout. In a lot of municipalities, the only candidates were some judicial candidates. We are heading towards November, which is going to be a presidential election. I think this is a real opportunity for your office to try to get this this in place. And I appreciate the attitude, and I do hope you will contact League Women Voters. They may be willing to assist you with this and get a good procedure set up. You have the April 3rd election to further, you know, fine-tune this, and then perhaps by November you'll really be able to say we've made a good effort at giving these individuals the right to vote. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last sentence of your report, Inspector, indicates that the individual was notified by the jailer in writing at the time of his or her the restoration of those voting rights. Is there communication also with the Election Commission in that case, or the Election Commission that would be governing that individual's voting under normal circumstances based on a home address?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Supervisor. The notification to that body would come through our agency at the time of the submission of a request for ballot. There's no pre-notification of us to be like, comes through with the request for ballot application.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank the Inspector and the Major for a very, very thorough report. I think you anticipated many of the questions that we would have otherwise asked, I think. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sir President. It's our pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
I would like to make motion to place this on file so the public can get it.
Sir President, Jersey moves to receive and place on file at number 9.
On the motion to receive and place on file, Supervisor Sturzik?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Cesar?
Aye.
Roberts?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
And number 2.
Item number 10 from the Office of the Sheriff, submitting an informational report regarding the execution of a contract with G4S Waxhut for bailiff services in Milwaukee County courtrooms. This item is informational only and thus otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr.
Mr. Chairman, the supervisors. The item before you is basically concerning part-time bailiffs. And a little bit of background to help understand why we've entered into this emergency contract. In the 2012 approved budget, basically part-time bailiffs was one of the items that was included in the approved budget. As the committee is aware, there have been significant issues with the Deputy Sheriff's Association as far as how many bailiffs would remain, how many deputy sheriffs would remain in the sheriff's office after numerous court appearances and so forth. The final number has now come to light. Unfortunately, the sheriff has had to lay off 48 deputies based on the county executive's budget, and therefore that has now put us in a situation where those part-time bailiffs become an essential part of our organization. So in order to move this along quickly, what we've done is entered into an emergency contract with G4S. I will state that Mark Schaefer, if you have specific questions for G4S, is in the audience as their general manager. He's here today if those questions arise. Of course, we also, Mr. Preedy, can answer any of the fiscal questions that would arise from this. Basically, what this contract will do, it has a 45-day out clause if necessary to cancel. We are looking at, in the future, near future, doing an RFP process to open this up to any other vendors that might be interested. The other issue is that on such short term, and having just gone through the layoff of our deputies, that the human resource possibility, that is as far as county employees being hired and going through the process and the background process and so forth, would not be quick enough, if you will, or expeditious enough to get us the help that we currently need. One plus with G4S is that they have the ability to hire individuals with previous law enforcement backgrounds that have gone through law enforcement standards board training, as well as they can provide the additional training specific to the courtrooms, which of course our training division will be involved with as well. So at this particular time, our informational report goes through that the necessity of having these part-time bailiffs join our organization, at least on the emergency basis, and then as the process moves forward with the RP, in the future, near future, we'll be submitting the results of that particular plan. Thank you.
Inspector, as much as this is an emergency declaration, intimating the fact that 48 deputy sheriffs have been laid off, but process being what it is, sounds like they can even be, if they want to, in some of those positions. How long do you think this contract will take effect?
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, the timing on this is, I would say, 2 to 3 months minimum in order to get an RFP published, get it out to vendors, to have submissions done, to go through the process of reviewing that and then making a final submission, getting it to the board for approval. So I would state a minimum of 2 to 3 months.
With respect to G4S, does G4S have the names of these deputies? Do they already have people on a list that they can use? I'm trying to understand what's going on.
Yes, Chairman, G4S, and again, Mark Schaefer is here, you can speak to that, has had advertising out. All of our deputies that were laid off, they have all of their names, so if they're interested, they certainly can make application. I don't know if they specifically contacted them. But, of course, they're certainly eligible. They would certainly fit the criteria. And we would look forward, if that's the case, to seeing them come back.
Thank you, Inspector. Before I get to the individuals who have said cards,
for testimony. Any questions?
Committee members.
Supervisors.
How will the
thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply would be interested in the court's, the judiciary's response to this initiative, if it's timely to offer that at this point. I obviously, it's going to have impact on them. The level of training, all of that, I think, is part and parcel of what this speaks to.
Thank you, Supervisor. Court Administrator Bruce Harvey, would you come forward, sir? Supervisor Broderick, it's
off to my colleagues.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bruce Harvey, the District Court Administrator. The Chief Judge was here earlier. Unfortunately, he had a commitment over at Marquette. Had to leave. Therefore, he has provided me his comments on this particular subject, and with your permission, I'll read them. Just in preface, there is the authority for the sheriff to depute, I used to think of as deputize, but depute an individual to provide coverage, in this case, in the courts. And the Chief Judge has seen that letter of authorization, which is referenced in the Chief Judge's remarks from the Sheriff's Department. And the Chief Judge's remarks are, I am concerned about two aspects of this contract. The letter of authority should clearly indicate that the hourly bailiffs have the same authority in the courtroom that current deputy sheriffs have, including arrest powers. I've seen a draft of that letter, and it indicates that it does indicate that. Secondly, I'm concerned that this is just the beginning. My understanding of the budget provision is that it was to be allowed for shift relief only, that is, the hourly bailiffs. My concern is that next year someone will increase this number. I believe that this will raise serious public and courtroom safety issues due largely to the lack of consistency of Sheriff's Department personnel. And this is a matter of serious concern, and this will only exacerbate the situation. And I'd be glad to answer any questions as much as I can on the subject.
Well, that was the first thing that occurred to me. And, of course, I come from something law enforcement background many years ago. To have rent-a-cops protecting our judiciary, I think, is a very bad idea. And if the sheriff thinks this is a good idea, and if this is ultimately implemented, I hope he is willing to stand responsible for the consequences.
Thank you.
Any further comments, Mr. Chairman?
No.
Can we get a copy of the Chief Judge's? Do you have a copy of the statement?
I would be glad to write them up and submit them to the committee. I will do that.
Thank you, sir. Supervisor Weisshoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we have somebody from the Deputy Sheriff's Office?
We have President Dwight Belver, we have Mr. Norbert Gedemer.
Norbert Gedemer is our trustee. Our treasurer, I apologize.
Mr. Gedemer?
Yes.
Morning, Chairman, morning, supervisors. I just have a couple brief things before I turn it over to Mr. Gedemer. I find it funny how we're using the emergency clause in the sheriff's letter, County Ordinance 32.28, to sign a contract with Wackenhut this quickly and give them the inside door to these part-time positions. I do not know what the emergency is.
on why they couldn't follow 3.25 on the RFP process. I understand Inspector Schmidt said it was an emergency. They had to get someone in. Human resources couldn't go through the background quick enough of the laid off 48 deputies. Well, of the laid off 48 deputies, 20 of them were bailiffs. So why do you have to do a background check of people that were already bailiffs? The other question I have is if it was such an emergency and they couldn't do background checks, why do we have 8 of them that have been hired as COs that start this Saturday, and we have 5 that are starting as juvenile correction officers within the county? HR went pretty quick to hire them. To say we need a background check of people that already did the job, and I'll let Mr. Gettermer talk about it more in depth, but you want to give a contract to Wackenhut for 12 people at $1.3 million. He will go over the numbers for you, but from your own comptroller, our deputies come to about $90,000 with benefits per deputy per year. So going from their numbers, it is a lot cheaper to keep our people already in those positions. And if they're part-time, I do not know why there is not a reason to bring them back in those part-time positions when they've already done the job. You don't need the training. They're doing it as they were up to February 5th. I also find it funny how it's not even, the ink hasn't even dried on the layoff papers. It's been less than a month, and here we are asking for private security to take over in the courthouse. I, along with the chief judge, am wondering where does this go from here? Now, if you're laying off people that were doing the job, and now you're putting people in those positions, was this the plan all along? I can turn it over to Mr. Gettermer. Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Chairperson, fellow supervisors, Norb Gettermer, Treasurer of the Deputy Sheriff's Association. I'm going to talk on just a few subjects regarding this proposal. And one of them is the position of the FDSA in terms of advocating for the members of the association. We're obligated to help protect our employees' right to recall. A contract was just entered into just a little over 2 months ago that guarantees the right of our employees to have recall up to 6 years in 1 day. I understand that this is a budget item that was put in as part-time positions, but the county at no time offered the association an attempt to negotiate for those part-time positions. It's interesting that during the same budget hearings that created those part-time positions, we were negotiating a contract, and somehow that item never came up on the table. As the spokesperson for the chief judge stated, the part-time positions are for shift covering and in shortage on shifts. At no time has the sheriff's department come to us and said, what can we do about this? Those are things that have to be done. The last time that Milwaukee County went down the road of having emergency appointments, and with Wackenhut, as a matter of fact, was with the security officers that guard the doors. And after a couple of years of litigation, it came back that you had to hire those people back, pay them back pay, because proper procedures weren't followed. In terms of being an emergency, the quickest way to resolve this emergency is to simply bring back the people that were laid off a month ago, not even a month ago. Those people are ready to go. They're trained. They know the jobs. In some cases, they can be put back in the courtrooms they came from. That's the fastest way to handle this. If that wasn't done because there's not money in the budget for that, there's still deputy sheriffs that are working in the cells facility and the central facility that are being utilized in I shouldn't say non-traditional because we've had deputy sheriffs in there, but we've also evolved from that, and they could be utilized in the court system. The next is the financial aspect of it, and with Supervisor Biddle's permission, I'd like to pass out these. And if
you can just follow along. When the Sheriff's Department entered into this contract with Wacken Hut, the amount they have listed is $1,387,360. That's for 12.5 FTEs. Now, I don't know what their overhead cost is and how that goes into that, but if you just divide that by 12, that's just shy of $111,000 a position. Now, the numbers we received October 19th from your labor director, Fred Bow, indicate that the annual cost of a deputy sheriff, based on the wage, health care, average overtime included, FICA, and pension, was $91,431. And with the concession on the pension, that brings it down to $87,531. That's a savings of $23,400 per position. Considering we're 2 months into the year, and we're talking about bringing back deputy sheriffs for 10 months as opposed to 12, that brings the cost of those deputies all the way down to $73,000 to bring them back for the remainder of 2012. You can hire back 19 deputies at $72,000 for that $1,387,360. And that doesn't include the cost of having to advocate for those rights of recall, which we're obligated to do, and then you'll be obligated to obviously present the contradictory argument. What we're asking you to do is essentially look at these numbers. Look at the numbers that's been provided to you by the Sheriff's Department. Look at the numbers provided to you by us and through your own labor director, I might add. And see where your numbers come out. Crunch the numbers. And if they're different, by all means, give them to me, because I have a contract to negotiate in 10 months, and I need the real numbers. And if Fred didn't give them to me, I need them. But I have no reason to believe that the numbers provided by Fred Bow just 4 months ago aren't legitimate numbers. So, in closing, I think you owe it to the deputies that served the county for almost 10 years to, at the very least, postpone a decision on this and look at the situation and make as much of an informed decision as possible. There are other alternatives to simply handing out almost $1.4 million in a contract to Wacken Hut. He can move deputies out of the jail, out of the cell facility, and he can bring these other deputies back. If the money's there, that's what it should be utilized for. Do you have any questions?
Mr. Gettimer.
Yes.
Mr. Gettimer, with respect to your contract on the recall rights of deputies, 6 years and 1 day, what is supposed to happen according to that contract right now? That's where it's supposed to be. And the fact that these panel's positions are there to make me feel.
It's my understanding that any time the number allocated increases, that the most senior person of those laid off is offered a recall to come back. That's regardless of whether they've taken a position with the South facility or with Children's Court Center, and then they simply come back to work. I don't know exactly what the HR procedures are. But if it's an emergency, I'd like to think they could streamline it a bit. It was easy enough to walk them out the door. I'd like to think that it's fairly quick to bring them back in.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Any comments? Supervisor Chairs? Supervisor Phil?
Well, this, as I understand it, is an emergency declaration, and it's just a report to this board. I don't believe there's an action before, so am I correct in that regard? I see Mr. Grady shaking his head yes. This is within the purview of the sheriff managing his department. Am I correct in that regard, Mr. Grady?
Sure. Yes. The sheriff has rather broad authority in this area. It's a duty to attend upon the courts. Has been confirmed in court cases, specifically in court cases, John County, that indicated that he had the right to contract out for the services in Brownham County. So the sheriff does have that about authority. I'm not prepared to consider the data to deal with collective bargaining arguments, but yes, I'm very comfortable.
Okay, and I understand that, Mr. Grady, I do hope your office will look at the numbers. First of all, I will move that we make this an informational report for the board so everyone sees this. But I guess what supervisors can do is use the bully pulpit, if you will, to state what we think about this action. I want to point out a couple things. Inspector Schmidt indicated this was the county executive's budget. This is the county executive's budget reacting to the governor's budget. It was $55 million from the governor that caused these layoffs. So let's make that clear. We're hearing criticism that the sheriff did not talk to the deputies union regarding this part-time issue. It was the governor's action to preserve this union. So the sheriff is not following what the governor put in place. So I want to make those two criticisms very clear. I also think it is incorrect for the sheriff to be using lieutenants, as I understand it, in correctional officer positions.
Captains.
Captains in correctional officer positions. And then propose something like Wackenhut, GS4 Wackenhut, for temporary bailiffs. That is an action that is very imprudent, and I'm willing to stand up and say so. I think this is the sheriff showing he's not going to cooperate. And if he wants to continue to blame this board and to blame the county executive, I'm going to continue to point out that it was the governor that gave us $55 million cut that we reacted to, and it was the governor that left in place the deputies union. Now, I'm not criticizing the deputies union. The deputies came forward and took significant benefit cuts at the time of the budget. I give them credit for that. But the sheriff is not working with you. And it's obvious to me that if there's this kind of money available for him to do temporary contracts, to bring in temporary bailiffs, which the chief judge is indicating some objection to, it's obvious to me that he could work within his own budget and bring some of those deputies back that have been laid off due to the governor's budget. Thank you. That's as much as I can say.
Supervisor Bennett, for Supervisor Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we've done a disservice not having HR here to talk about why the process has been so slow to bring back some of the 48 laid-off deputies and put them in these positions that they already have the expertise. They passed checks and things of that nature previously being employed here. Why couldn't they just fill in these gaps? You know, this is another situation where there is a simple and efficient solution to a problem that has not been taken because it's become obvious to me that the sheriff has used this whole cutting of the deputy of his staff to give another contract to Wackenhut. That's all this has been about. It's been nothing more about political theater to once again use his broad authority as a constitutional officer to give another contract to Wackenhut. And so he gets on TV and he writes his press releases and he does his grandstanding to talk about, I don't have any money, poor deputy sheriff is being laid off. And when you have the ability to work with the deputy sheriff's union, you have the ability to work with HR to find a way to streamline, bring these guys back, you subvert that process, other processes that you have at the time with other deputy sheriffs and other departments to bring them back to do bailiff positions, and you go right behind and give an outsourced contract to Wackenhut. I think that's outrageous. And I think it's disingenuous to use those 48 individuals as pawns to a game to give Wackenhut a contract. I mean, and you couldn't convince me, I don't care if you were a snake charmer, you couldn't convince me that this is not what it's all been about. Because I think it's cruel. I really do. I do. I think it's ridiculous that we do all this, we have all these fights, all these cuts, and as my colleague said, not one time has he criticized the government. Not one nine. Because he's scared of the governor. Is he scared to criticize the governor? So we come here, county exec does what he does, and you know, we didn't always agree, but he did what he had to do. We did what we had to do to try to work with the Deputy Sheriff's Union, put back some folks, alleviate the cuts a little bit. You come and make a parade of this for months, all to come back to this committee to get a contract to whack and hunt. This is ridiculous. And so for us to be in a position where we can't manage what he's doing because of his authority, you know, I mean, what can we do? I mean, I won't be here, you know, in the next cycles, but we need to find a process. We need to put some pressure in the sheriff's office to bring back those guys. There is not a shortage of people in this county who need work. Not at all. And if HR, I'm not trying to tell them how to do their jobs, but if the sheriff's office did put in place a good faith effort to try to bring people back, you know, internally, that's way too long, considering the options that we have available to us to fill these positions. And so we really need to streamline our processes. I thought that's what we were doing when we were realigning all these departments, so that we can have a more efficient, you know, process to get people in place in these positions, in these different departments, so they can serve our constituents. But I just think that it's incredible. And I marvel at his audacity to come here, make all of this grand stand, all of this performance, to get a contract away to whack that. So now it calls me to question, does the sheriff have some financial interest when G4 is whacking up? I mean, because I'm at a loss here. Because if he was being very responsible with his resources, he could have easily found another way to get this done with those 48 that were laid off. But he did not do that. That's not what I'm hearing. So unless you can tell me different, or Inspector, my good friend Inspector Schmidt can tell me different, I'm appalled at this. And you guys are lucky that you're hiding behind your constitutional authority, because if you brought this to me, I would vote no for it. Based on it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did you want to ask him? That's good.
You know, I would, but I know what I'm going to hear. I know what I'm going to hear. So I just want to be on record saying that I'm disappointed that in HR that we couldn't streamline the process to get those laid off deputies back into action, back into work, to provide the services needed to protect our judges. And I'm just appalled at the nature of giving this contract to whack and hunt. Like, that's the most politically expedient thing that you can do, is find another way to get whack and hunt a contract. And that's what it's all been about. And so you can tell me different. I'll nod my head and say thank you. But my personal belief is that the Sheriff Clark purposely just wanted to find ways to outsource more county money to a private entity. So I'm off my soapbox for the moment.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor is proud of the white shot that sees our
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The sheriff generally does not appear before us. And I tend to have sympathy for the surrogates that he sends to represent a point of view that I think there's too much intelligence there to believe that they share necessarily entirely in his judgment. So I think I want to make clear that I make that distinction. This initiative, for me, raises very serious questions about whether our community safety needs, our jurors, our jurists, people in our courtrooms and throughout the course of time are being served, or if instead what's being served is political ends of the sheriff himself. And I think he needs to be reminded that petulance is simply not the basis for good operational decisions and initiatives like this.
Thank you, Supervisor
Washington. Thank you, Paul. Actually, I don't have any questions for the Deputy Sheriff's Association. So thank you. And I would like the Sheriff's Office to come up and answer some questions with this. And Mr. Chairman, at this time, I'd also like to make a fishing request that you ask that the Director of Human Resources, Ms. Carrie Mitchell, come to our committee, because honestly, I don't believe the accusations that are being made about her department not being able to fill these positions, and I would like her to come here and explain to this committee, especially if the accusations against her and her department are going to be made by the Sheriff's Department. So, what I'd like to point out for my colleagues, this isn't a done deal, and I my direct message to the Sheriff's Office is you're not going to contract out these positions to Wackenhut. Don't waste your time, because we're not contracting out, we're not privatizing these, because you're not going to get the fund transfer. You can sit in the back and smirk all you want, but the fact is you have a personnel line item and you have a contract line item, and we're not going to make the fund transfer. Go ahead, do your contract, run a deficit, and we'll be glad to hang that deficit around the sheriff's neck when he wants to run for office. There's a way to fix this problem by having people sit around the table and call back the deputies, along with working with human resources to fill those positions. So there's a process for this. And I would like to know, and somebody needs to explain to me from the sheriff's office here, who declared the emergency and under what conditions prompted this? Because I didn't hear anything from the chief judge, excuse me, saying that there was an emergency in the courts. So what was the cataclysm that took place that required a declaration of an emergency?
Supervisor Weish, I think, Mr. Gettemer, you wanted to make one more comment before you left, and then I'm going to ask you to leave the table.
Okay, thank you. The comment I want to make is that there was a provision made that perhaps Wackenhut would hire retired law enforcement, and that would expedite the procedures for them. We have laid off deputies that have families, and they are in their 20s, they're in their 30s, some may be in their 40s, and they have lifetime things that they have to, lifetime obligations they have to take care of. And what we're looking at doing here, what the sheriff's looking at doing, is giving retirees who already have the best pensions we've ever heard of, at the youngest age we've ever heard of, the equivalent of cash jobs, while people that have families to raise get their unemployment check every 2 weeks. It's not anything that's, I mean, is it legal? Yes. Is it ethical? Is it moral? I don't know. That's where I start to question it a little bit.
Okay.
And then I'll just end it with that.
Thank you. And just to, it's noted, your comments, your number was 19, correct? That the Wackenhut contract could bring back 19 laid off deputies. Am I correct in that number?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, let's get the Sheriff's Department, Supervisor Weish, you had questions for the Sheriff's Department, Inspector Schmidt. Did you understand Supervisor Weishon's question?
Madam Chair, Supervisors, two comments, and then I will ask you to rephrase this question to make sure I properly answer it.
I can just answer my question. We're not here to hear his commentary. He's here to answer our questions.
Right. Inspector Schmidt, I'll give you an opportunity to make your comments, but let's finish with Supervisor Weishon. Did have the floor? He has a question on the floor. Supervisor Weishon, please rephrase your question so Inspector Schmidt understands it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question is, what precipitated the decision to declare a so-called emergency that required this contract to be initiated?
All right. Congratulations, Sheriff. Yes. Sure. Supervisor, it's, as I reiterated at the beginning of my opening statements, if you will, the unfortunate layoffs of the 48 deputies is what caused this to go into effect. In fact, the sheriff is not the one, and that needs to be very clear. The sheriff is not the person who laid off the deputies. This was invoked by the county. County Human Resources is the one who sent letters to lay off our deputies. This was not something that
of course, we want it to happen as well known through the court process that we went through. So therefore, when this was pushed through by the courts, when it was pushed through by the county, it forced our hand now to try and make up some of the positions, which, of course, was allowed by the 2012 budget in the part-time bailiffs.
Well, the part-time bailiffs, the situation and the resources for that, you knew in November when we passed the budget that you would have to recruit 12 of these part-time bailiffs. Yet you took no steps prior to today to recruit those positions on an hourly basis.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, Supervisor, the issue is it's not really 12 part-time bailiffs. It actually goes to 25 part-time bailiffs, if indeed that's as many as we would bring in. So therefore, no, there was literally no reason for it at that time, because with all of the litigation that was taking place over what potentially, how many were literally going to be laid off? It started at 61, then it went to a number in the 50s, then it went to, literally, it almost appeared it was going to go down to zero, and then litigation kicked in again, and now the end results, which just took place, was 48 deputies that were unfortunately laid off.
But you somehow could have the time to manage to contact Wackenhut and craft some kind of emergency contract, and when did those negotiations start?
Madam Chair, Supervisor, the exact timing, I would say within the last 30 days, less than that. I don't know the specific timing.
So we had 30 days to contact a private contractor, but we didn't have 30 days to contact our human resources department and provide some relief for the courts if a problem exists. Like I said, I have yet to hear the chief judge or anyone from the courts say that there was a safety issue in the courts. And what I'd like to just state for my colleagues, too, these positions are county positions. To contract out, this is a backdoor privatization of these hourly bailiff's positions. This was a strategy that was put in place literally 6 months ago to have these hourly positions created. Yet nobody seems to have been able to have the time or the effort to follow through with that plan for the last 6 months. So this isn't a done deal. As I said, he might be able to enter into a contract, but he doesn't have the money to pay for it. And there's a fund transfer that needs to take place. So, you know, go ahead and write all the contracts you want, but unless Mr. Clark there has a printing press in his basement, we're not paying for it. So, you know, that fund transfer has to take place. That's the one thing we do have is the power of the purse here. And if we don't want to spend money on that, don't be entering into contracts. Plus, your own statement here that you plan on going out for RFP for this process would take 2 to 3 months. I wanted, like I said, I want to hear from Ms. Mitchell here to find out why we somehow can't hire 12 or 25 hourly bailiffs to help satisfy the situation that would be county employees. You know, under our human resources process within the next 2 to 3 months. There's absolutely no reason to enter into a contract with a private entity. So, Mr. Chairman, I wish we could call Ms. Mitchell here if she responded to our request. Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Weishaupt, since we both came to the board at the same time, and you suggested that I walk down there or that I get Director Mitchell, walk down there to get Director Mitchell and Ms. McKnight from Human Resources so that they could come forward and answer any questions that community members may have. Supervisor Weishaupt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming at such short notice. I thought it would be only fair, since there was many accusations made about human resources, that you would have an opportunity to respond about filling positions for these hourly bailiff positions. Could you just give us a quick response on how long you believe it would take to fill these positions?
Well, I will respond to that. Well, the job is ready to, and it's ready for recruitment, but we were told to hold it. They had, that the sheriff department was considering, you know, subcontracting those jobs out. Why, I don't know. But if we open up a recruitment and we do it like for promotional only, so that, well, we wouldn't have to do it. We would have to open it because of the fact that those employees are not considered employees, so they wouldn't be able to apply for that job promotionally. We would have to open up that job as original so that people could apply. And which, once we open it up, it's open up to everybody. So it'll take us a while to filter through it. So it would probably take us probably a couple weeks to sort it out. And then based on the sheriff's process, then it's, the ball is in their court. How long it takes them to interview. If they decide to send all these people through another background check, it would probably take another 30 days on their part.
Yeah, who told you to hold off on the process?
Their HR person.
Well, just to be clear, I'm not quite sure.
Marlo Knox.
Well, not that, but the fact is I don't think you've worked for the sheriff's department. And that you know, you should take your direction from the director and the county exec, I think, is ultimately the one who decides and gives direction in the county board on whether or not you know, we should be recruiting and filling positions.
Well, I think in general, I will acknowledge that there is concern about the length of time it takes at the county to hire positions. However, it really just takes a plan and some communication about what needs to be filled and when, and then we execute on it. I was not made aware that this was coming forward and needed to be filled urgently, but certainly I don't understand why it's something that would need to go on and on. It's something that we could execute on in a fair amount of time, I believe.
So your fair amount of time is you feel that you could recruit the or fulfill your responsibilities at Human Resources within the next 2 to 3 months?
Oh, absolutely.
Or for a shorter time period?
Yeah, it could be shorter, you know, but the part, once it leaves our hand, it's up to that department to set up and schedule the interviews, and we don't have any control of that part of the process.
Well, thank you, like I said, for coming on such short notice, and I think you did enlighten us on a few things. And I think it just, as Supervisor Broderick pointed out earlier, that the sheriff does not like to appear, because you see how he's manufactured this phony crisis that we have here in order to, you know, privatize law enforcement positions. And I think there really needs to be a hard look at that. Maybe some of our media folks that are here, maybe they should look at who donates to Sheriff Clark's campaign, and maybe you'll see a correlation, but that's just speculation on my part. Don't mean to be too consistent, but
I don't know.
I want to say thank you for your for coming down, and I appreciate you answering my question.
Okay. Any further questions of Ms. Mitchell or Ms. McKnight? Supervisor Biddle.
I appreciate you shedding light to the situation, because it was very confusing why this had to be such a long, drawn-out process, when I know that things could be done in a more expedient fashion than what they were suggesting. So thank you for coming down and making time to talk to us.
Welcome. If any leader is feeling that way, I definitely want to hear about it so we can correct it immediately.
Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, you recognize me.
Yes. Thank you very much.
We heard from speakers today their analysis of some of the numbers, but I'm interested in hearing from the Sheriff's Department and Mr. Freeby in specific, who I know is prepared to answer the question about some of the analysis. I think that we represented facts in the letter, as well as testimony, there was an interpretation of full full allocation of the budget. I'm wondering if Mr. Creedy was prepared to give a little bit of the financial background and strategy behind their side as the counterargument to the decision that's being proposed here today, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Again, I would start with the calculations of the cost, and that this would somehow refund 19 laid-off deputies. Using the numbers that Mr. Gettemer provided, I will not dispute that. I believe the numbers you received were correct. The annual cost of the deputy is slightly over $84,000 a year. That comes out to an hourly rate of about $42 an hour. The contract we have proposed with G4S is an hourly rate of $26.68 an hour. So if he has some distortion on how that pays for 19 deputies, somehow he's not understanding how many hours are involved. The hourly rate for a deputy is $42 an hour. The hourly rate we pay under this contract is $26.68. As far as the issue of why we ended up where we did, I'll accept responsibility for the plan. I was the one who made the decision that we should not attempt to fill the hourly bailiffs in January because there were potential layoffs. If we filled them in January, it would have been other people and there'd be no slots available for the layoff people. What I have advised the sheriff to do now that we have the layoffs is first try to place those laid off deputies in vacant correction officer spots, full time positions with benefits. Once that is done, we go to G4S and say, hire as many of the laid off deputies as you can. You can do it faster than we can through human resources, and they get paid the rates that way. If that all failed, we'd look at the next round if there's anyone left to hire. That was my recommendation to the sheriff. Don't fill those hourly bailiffs in January. We need to hold that in reserve for potential laid-off deputies. The entire budget that was adopted didn't simply reduce the number of deputies. It was always replace them with something else. Get rid of them in the jail, replace them with correction officers, full-time correction officer positions. That's what we are targeting first. Bring back as many of the laid-off deputies, full-time correction officer slots, and then we'll reassess where we are. And then, because we can do G4S faster than we can work through the county system, G4S hire these laid-off deputies. There wasn't any scheme to punish the deputies. It was my plan to target the deputies. As the Director of Human Resources mentioned, once they're laid off, we can't do an exam just for them. It's open to everyone. By doing things with G4S, we had more control. Target this group of people to hire, something we can't do by going through human resources. So it was, I'm really appalled by the comments from the supervisors that some nefarious scheme to punish the deputies. We didn't want to lay them off. You sued us, saying you're not laying them off fast enough. And the reason we were trying to delay this is because it always is replace them with something else. If you don't give us time to replace them, we have an emergency. That's the reason we ended up with it.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to ask a question and response from the person responsible. Appreciate it.
Supervisor Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Creeby, does your response include the use of captains as correctional officers?
No, sir.
That's
a different issue.
It is a different issue, but it demonstrates an attitude, I think, that underlies both these issues. Now, beyond that, I'd like to comment on the idea of the fiscal emergency as a tactic and as a device. We've seen this used before, and I think the sheriff carefully observed our former county executive's behavior in declaring a fiscal emergency in order to wrest from us, the people's representatives, budgetary controls, which he did with some effect. Unfortunately for him, and unfortunately for us, this wasn't pointed out as clearly as it might have been. At the end of the fiscal year, rather than showing a deficit, the county executive showed a surplus under this fiscal emergency. And it wasn't due to the actions he had taken. It was due to the fact that he was essentially exposed for having committed a fraud upon the people. So I listened to all of these explanations, and at the base of this, we all understand a political game is going on here. And this is a response on the part of the sheriff to moves by the county executive and the county board. As Supervisor Weishaupt put forth earlier, we have the purse strings. So if we want to play hardball, guys, get the bats.
We have this item before us.
Motion to receive and place on file.
So it's my understanding, and I went to the resources to see if I could get some back. It's my understanding, I've just heard, and I don't know if it was stated earlier, but Mr. Creek, you're indicating that for those people who are, have been hired under this emergency situation, they are public enemies.
I haven't seen the list. We have given the names to G4S and encouraged them to make offers to these individuals.
Who's in place now? Are those
the contract hasn't begun yet. We don't have anyone from Wackenhut yet.
Okay, so these courts are not covered?
They are covered with deputies being pulled from other areas, which causes residual overtime in other areas, so they're getting staffed on overtime.
Thank you, sir. Just want to understand what's going on. Thank you very much. There's a motion to receive.
Mr. Chairman, I just note that Mr. Bowe is here. I didn't know if he had any comments on this. I'm still intrigued by the number 19 that we received, and I don't know.
Supervisor, if you'd like to come up, Mr. Bowe.
Or perhaps Mr. Bowe could address the issue of the requirement that the sheriff negotiate with the union, the deputies union, regarding part-time issues as well. That was raised.
Supervisor, so you have the floor.
And Mr. Grady's trying to be...
What? Excuse me.
Yep.
Thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to touch on that topic briefly. In terms of the process, anytime the county creates a new position, they have to go through the process of creating minimum qualifications for the position, such as pay range for the position, determining what kind of person we're looking for. That's the human resource function that's been discussed here. I caution us to get too far ahead of ourselves in the market. I don't know, as I sit here, what the minimum qualifications for this bailiff only position are. If it looks like a deputy sheriff, a law enforcement standard bureau, accreditation, certification, it's the kind of position that might be in the deputy sheriff's office. On the other hand, if it's not that kind of position in terms of qualifications, it might look more like a correctional officer, it might be an asset. So I don't know where that's going, and that would affect the call rights under the deputy sheriff's contract. I have no idea as I say the things, so I'm just careful about this.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Grady. And Mr. Bob wasn't here to hear the comments. So perhaps Mr. Bob could just tell us what is required with regard to the deputy's contract when part-timers are hired. Could we just get the information?
Fred Ball from the Department of Labor Relations. When a part-time employee is hired, it would depend upon what position he is hired into. If he's hired into a deputy sheriff position, he becomes part of the DSA bargaining unit. And if some action happens down the road requiring seniority or things like that, his part-time status would be how it is calculated. But the fact that he's part-time does not preclude him from being part of the bargaining unit. It's the position that he holds, not the individual. If the position is a deputy sheriff, paren part-time, or seasonal, or whatever, it is still in the bargaining unit.
And just to be really basic here, Mr. Bowe, as I understand it, Act 10 exempted the deputies union from the removal of unions representing employees at the level without having their union certified. I mean, basically, they took deputies, the sheriff deputies and the firefighters, out of Act 10 and preserved their unions. Is that a basically a fair
That's statement? Basically correct, except for some other further action where they, involving health insurance, but that's not really related to this subject.
And this came directly from our state legislator and the governor's office, and it is up to the sheriff to deal with these unions. That comes right from state law
at this point in time.
Thank you. That's sufficient. I don't have anything further, and I won't have any more comments.
Any other committee members have a question or comment? Mr. Buck. Thank you for your time. We have a motion to receive and place on file. Any further discussion? Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
On the motion to receive and place on file, Supervisors Jurczyk?
Aye.
Wyshon?
Aye.
Cesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The item is received and placed on file.
Okay. Item 11 was withdrawn, so we are now on items 12 and 13. Supervisor Wyshon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it sounds like to make a motion to move approval and take together both items 12 and 13.
Would anyone like separate action?
On either 12 or 13, question.
Any discussion? Questions? Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll on items 12 and 13? We have a motion for approval for items 12 and 13. Instead of going one individual, that's why I ask for separate action. We're going to vote.
Thank you. On the motion to approve items 12 and 13, Supervisors Jurczyk?
Aye.
Wyshon?
Aye.
Cesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The items are approved.
Supervisor Jurczyk?
Sure.
Mr. Gray.
I was just trying to suggest the committee's preamble. The status update. There are 8 items on the list, and I think probably 6 of those I can jump very briefly on all the session comments issues. Go ahead and close on this.
Okay. That's great. Madam Clerk, would you read the item number 14?
Item number 14 is status update on pending litigation.
Thanks. Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to get in front of the committee the existence of all of these pieces of litigation, not going into significant detail with the two companies. You have a list in front of you, and I just want to run through the list very briefly. The first item on the list must be the Mountain Park Project case. And as you know, you approve the county filing its claim in that case, if that has been done. What's really happening in the case right now is various attorneys from various parties are arguing about deadlines and how much more time they need to respond to deal with other claims of the case. But it is moving forward. The second item number 2 is an item I'm going to walk through and discuss a little bit. Second item number 3, I just wanted to make you aware that the lawsuit is still pending. Really, nothing much has happened at this point for the filing of it. This is the lawsuit over the ordinance that was adopted last fall with respect to Bill 75. There's a letter asking for the cover. It's asking numbers by that ordinance, whether they're covered. represent the employees on the board. Item number four and five really go together and will be discussed in the whole session. Item number five, Council on Council. Item number six is the Hussey case. This is a case filed by a retiree on behalf of retirees alleging that the change to enforce co-based deductibles for individuals who have county paid retirement health insurance is illegal. That is being handled by outside counsel to the Wisconsin County Mutual Insurance Association. This is filed in state court and has been removed by our counsel to federal court. Item number seven is a lawsuit filed by the Nurses Union and Mrs. Slocher, who is a member of the Nurses Union, and it's a lawsuit for change in pension multiplier from 2 to 1.6. Again, arguing that that's the legal violation of their pension benefits, their vested pension benefits. That is pending in state court, and also is being handled by outside counsel again through the mutual. Item number eight is a lawsuit filed by the Nurses Union and the Attorneys Union together, also filed in state court. It relates to the Medicare Part B, the elimination of reimbursement of Medicare Part B for members who are entitled to retiree health benefit. That also is handled by outside counsel with the mutual. All three of those cases, 6, 7, 8, are being handled by attorney health limit with different parts out there. He has experience with the Benton County and one of the building lawsuits that follow the pension benefits. He's also defended the county Champlain Sickle Loss lawsuit and also worked at the city with respect to the retirement health insurance lawsuit that they were involved in both of those cases. So he has experience and experience. So that's it. Open session.
Any questions?
Just when L. Levy is representing the county in 6, 7, and 8, all three of them, and he is retained by our insurance company and being paid.
Yes.
Thank you. I really appreciate this format, by the way. I think this is great. Thank you.
Questions for items 2 or 5?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion at this time that the committee adjourn into closed session under the provision of Wisconsin Statutes Section 1985-1G for the purpose of the committee receiving oral or written advice from legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted with respect to pending or possible litigation with regard to the following matters. I think Mr. Grady's already identified the cases that we're going to discuss in closed session. At the conclusion of the closed session, the committee may reconvene into open session to take whatever actions it may deem necessary. And I would also just add, Mr. Chairman, that we get advice from Corp Counsel that it is appropriate to go into closed session to have those discussions. And I so move.
That's great.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the items are appropriate.
Thank you very much. It has been moved that the committee go into closed session to receive advice to discuss these cases. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
On the motion to go into closed session, Supervisor Sturcic.
Aye.
Weishan.
Aye.
Bezars.
Aye.
Broderick.
Aye.
Biddle.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you very much. And again, we will return to item 2 after these closed session items have been addressed. Thank you.
Fiduciary Safety and General Services will now reconvene. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll to establish a quorum?
Supervisors Jurczyk?
Here.
Weishan?
Here.
Cesar's?
Excused.
Broderick?
Here.
Biddle?
Present.
Mr. Chair?
Here.
Yeah, five members present. I have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Item number two.
Item number two, a resolution ordinance to amend Milwaukee County Ordinances, Chapter 1, Rules of the County Board of Supervisors. On February 14th, this item was referred by the Committee of the Whole. Amendments number 1 and 4 were approved. Amendments 7 and 9 were withdrawn.
Thank you very much. And it's my understanding that Amendment 7 is also withdrawn. Has been withdrawn, I should say. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Cooley.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Terry Cooley here on behalf of this item. As was stated, and you all recall, this item was up a couple of weeks ago at the Committee of Whole, at which time I walked through this page by page, which I don't intend to do today unless you so desire. And just would repeat that this is a project that has been ongoing for a number of years, and just by way of a visual aid, I brought a folder which contains a number of the earlier drafts that we've been working on for several years. So this is a product that many hands have touched and has been a work in progress for some time, and happy to answer any questions that you or committee members may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Any questions, concerns before we go to the amendments? Any questions or concerns about the changes in the, or the legislation in front of us, Mr. Resolution?
I just wanted to sort of like, how are we going to pick up some of these amendments, and some of the sponsors of these amendments who may not be here?
Well, Jurczyk has about five of them. So.
Yes, I have a good number of them, and I have not that I know of. I'm not sure. I don't know of anyone calling.
No, I just wanted to be, I guess, one of the things. Does the county board, I mean, does the committee member need to move approval of each amendment?
I would just like to deal with all. I would say, Supervisor Weston, after Mr. Cooley, and then he's asked very questions, very comments directed toward him, then we can. Since we had the committee of the whole meeting, did go through the whole package. That would be both from those amendments 2 through 16, except for 1, 4, 7, and 9, which were either approved or withdrawn. And with respect to sponsored amendments not being available, as I said, I didn't receive some knowledge. Any general comments regarding chapter one? Supervisor Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, as it goes, when you look at the amendments and even the proposed changes in the county board rules, a lot of it makes sense to update, you know, certain language or take out archaic language. The only thing that I was perplexed about was that there was one issue where I didn't understand why it was being changed. And that was the a line I'm looking for it right now. But basically, you're taking away former members, I guess, privilege to be on the floor. So I was just looking for an explanation. I didn't want to do it at the Committee of the Whole because there were more important matters to be discussed there. And seeing that I won't be part of this honorable body in the next 4 years,
that it just wasn't that important at the time. But I did want to hear from Mr. Cooley why he saw fit to change that item. Like, was there, had there been some instances before my short tenure on the board where county former members coming on the floor causing havoc, creating chaos, disturbing county board business? Like, what prompted you to exclude people like me? Even my good friend Cesar is coming back and just saying, hey, let's get on the floor and sit by the analyst, you know, have some walks down memory lane, things of that nature.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, first of all, it wasn't a choice of mine. It was a change that was made a long time ago, a group effort of everybody who had been reviewing this document. Second of all, the language that is struck is simply that a former member automatically gets the privilege of the floor. Under the revision, anybody with the approval of the chairman of the board would be able to get the floor. Generally speaking, former members would have that privilege, but we might have a situation. In fact, a couple of years ago, we had somebody who did not walk out onto the floor but was in the audience who had been a supervisor some 30 years ago, you may recall, and I forget who it was. It was before my time, even. But it was somebody nobody in the room really knew. But he was a former member, and under this ordinance, he could have simply walked out onto the floor. And this is just really a way of establishing a bit of decorum and control. And I would think in most cases, certainly in the case of Supervisor Biddle, any future chair, and Supervisor Cesar's for that matter, any future chair would be more than happy to allow them on the floor. But that was the thinking of the group at the time that this was drafted, Mr. Chairman.
And I would say if a former member availed herself to the chambers and wanted some leeway, then it would be proper to inform the chairman or chairperson so that individual could acknowledge where the person was. And then other members would be informed as to who that person is, the significance of that person, and everyone else is just receiving information.
Agreed.
Supervisor Church.
Well, I mean, technically, people who are on the floor, who have a right to the floor, have been elected. So it's really our constituents that are saying who has a right to be on the floor. But I'd like to point out that with this hyper-political environment that we're living in, and I fear it's only going to get worse, it's very likely that former board members may well become lobbyists, etc., and just have a blanket rule allowing them to walk on the board floor would be highly inappropriate. I think it's a good rule to let the chairman establish order there.
But to my credit, maybe...
Well, this has nothing to do personally with Supervisor Biddle, I'll add.
I thought it was personal at first.
No, not at all.
I was hurt. No, but I know another legislative body said you still, that those members of the body previously has the right to be on the floor. Isn't that right? Like in the state senate.
Mr. Chairman and members, County Clerk Joe Zarnesky, most legislative bodies allow former members floor privileges. Some limit those privileges. The state legislature does allow former members floor privileges. They are pretty much unlimited. They may not be on the floor during a roll call. To the best of my knowledge, that is the only time that they're not allowed on the floor. But other legislative bodies... limited. Say former members may be on the floor with the permission of the presiding officer, for example.
Even if they're lobbyists, they
lobbyists are prohibited. If you are a former member and a lobbyist, you do not have floor privileges. And that's, I think this rule would say that because it says lobbyists are not allowed floor. So that's pretty much universal in legislative bodies as well. If you are a lobbyist and a former member, you do not have floor privileges.
232.
Yeah, I think that's in there, Mr. Cooley, somewhere where lobbyists are not allowed, if I recall reading it. If not, I would recommend that you put that in there.
232 is in
there. I think it's in there.
That's line 232.
Okay.
mention, because it is, if they, this is line 230, I think.
Wait, could be wrong. Are we looking at
it? Right.
Yeah, if registered as a lobby.
Yes.
Yeah. So you do have that prohibition. That's currently.
Currently.
Yes, and you're maintaining that currently. Mr. Chairman, if I could add that this change in the ordinance was in draft form long before anybody in this room conceived of the possibility of Supervisor Biddle becoming a county supervisor.
much less leaving as a county supervisor. To our great dismay.
I just think it's nice to have for us to stay. That's all. And to be in compliance, always more consistent with other honorable legislative bodies. I mean, I can see if there was money.
You haven't been here long enough to receive that privilege.
I can see if there's been, multiple circumstances where board members have come, tried to sit in their former seats, or just disrupt the county business. But if it hasn't really been an issue, it just seems like, what's the point? That's my thing. What's the point? But it's a minor thing. I'm not trying to bully this committee or the future county board, because I think it's important that folks who are going to be here the next 4 years have oversight over their own board rules. But as a potential, not a potential, but as a future former member, it would just warm my heart. I might come back, me and Paul come back together, and hang out. But if we could just keep that. So I'd like to offer the friendly amendment to just unstrike the former members from this. And I hope that you guys will support it. If not, I won't take it.
So give me, I was looking at put us in form, but I have something else.
Yes, the lights have changed. Well, on the one that's on the on our computers, which is I think the updated one now, it is line 32. Supervisor Biddle is correct.
Where it says former.
It just strikes former members.
Okay. Supervisor Biddle, you are offering to restore.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Former members.
Yes, sir.
So how often are you planning to come around?
All the time. Any free time I get.
This might be abusing your privileges. I don't know.
No, you're going to be at the other meetings. I'll miss you guys.
Any further discussion with respect to amending line 232 to include former members? Supervisor Biddle moves to restore former members. Any questions? Concerns? Not that this problem was released this
morning. On the verbal amendment, Supervisor Sturcek?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Cesars?
Okay, so this is ours. Aye. Not allowed on the floor.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Paul.
Still making an impact before you leave.
There you go.
And again, inasmuch as the session has a 2:00 date, agenda session, I'd like to report. Any other concerns as it relates to the body of chapter 1 before we proceed to the hearings? Any comments?
Sorry, sir. Just
want to acknowledge the Supervisor Haas. Okay, well then let's proceed to amendment number 2, which has been revised. Supervisor Pierce.
I spent a lot of time on this. I want to thank Mr. Session, because he and I sat down and discussed it, and I did at length review what Corporation Counsel provided, went and reread the statutes, reread Judge Carroll. I am not prepared to go with the recommendation from Corp Counsel. You could drive a truck through the loophole, that reads, except when authorized by the county executive. And I understand what's being said here. You know, under the circumstances that we had with Judge Carroll, the county exec felt that it was necessary to act quickly and to go in for a restraining order. First of all, a restraining order is a special procedure that allows you to go into court without notice. And it's one of those special procedures under the statutes that aren't really going to be used very often, I don't think. And it just set up a very unusual circumstance. I would think most of the time the county exec is going to want to talk to this board, but that being said, we're trying to work out a statutory language here. The amendment that I proposed, first of all, that word review, I think is an unfortunate word. It totally means passive, in my opinion. It's a passive type of action. And that's why I offered approval of all matters pertaining to initiating or answering suits. And then subject to Supervisor Weishin added the language subject to full board review of proposal to make it clear that it's the full board that would act. I still think that's good language. I've reviewed the statutes. I do think it's the prerogative of the board to initiate lawsuits. And when you have those circumstances such as we recently had, actually, you know, I see no problem with the county executive immediately asking the chairman to either call a special meeting of the committee or at least communicating and giving the board an opportunity to try to respond. It was an unusual circumstance. I know it was difficult. Rather than accepting what Corp Counsel has put forward, we'd be better off leaving it unchanged. I certainly don't want to accept this this loophole that appears to me to really give the county executive all authority to authorize lawsuits. And I don't think Corp Counsel intended that, but except as authorized by the county executive, the committee shall review and approve. I mean, that seems like it's an exception to everything. So, I mean, I'm willing to stay with the language I suggested, and I would still move approval of the language that is in Amendment 2 that was amended by Supervisor Weish, and I still think that is the language that specifically states the policy of this board with regard to lawsuits. And quite frankly, if we pass it and if the county exec vetoes it and we override a veto, we are successful. Then what are they going to do? I mean, and I don't want to take that attitude. What are they going to do? But we do set the policy around here.
Supervisor Jurczyk has moved to approve the revised version of Amendment 2. Any questions, concerns, comments from committee members?
I guess I have to check, Mr. Chair. If we pass this, and given Judge Carroll's ruling and the Corp Counsel's opinion based on that, it seems to me that this would then create an obligation on the part of the county executive to involve us because he has to enforce all resolutions and ordinances. But that has implications well beyond just this. It raises with some of you. And as an example, only as an example, we have a 1% for art policy that's been in effect for the last 10 or 12 years. The county executive substituted his judgment for ours. This was a resolution that was passed by the county board. He essentially failed to enforce that resolution and stripping the funding. And I know we could, you know, this is a complex area,
separation of powers. But the fact is that I think if I'm to read into what I believe is there, the court counsel's opinion, that he was derelict, in fact, then in that case in doing that and not following the company board's resolution and enforcing it. So I want to meet at another time with the court counsel to discuss the implications of this further, because I see us heading into a separation of powers wall down the line, and perhaps parties can come together on the table and resolve some of these potential conflicts before they actually confront us.
Thank you so much. Mr. Spring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to set aside for a moment the big issue of tonight's supporting the county board's authority. We've laid out our position in our memo, and there's no point in me asking. I understand you disagree. I just want to talk about a couple of practical things that the event that I'm concerned about. One is the use of the word answering in the very first line. If I read this literally, it would require us to come to the Judiciary Committee and then the full county board before we can answer a lawsuit. And we don't do that. We have to answer lawsuits in 20 days or 45 days. And I just think it's a wrong word. I think that makes sense with some points of jurisdiction. It reads that way, so I just want to be careful about that. So that's the first practical problem I'm concerned about. The other practical problem I've raised in the past is that we do a lot of, I can't turn it down, we do have a fair number of what I consider to be small claims collection type actions. And this, as written, would require us to come down to the Judiciary Committee for approval on all of those. I don't think, again, the difference of 10 people. When I drafted my suggestion, I suggested that we use a threshold of $10,000 that we could file lawsuits against individual matters less than $10,000 without coming to anybody. Matters over $10,000, we would have to go through the process of the Judiciary Committee. This language doesn't allow for that exception.
Well, so couldn't we create that exception?
Okay. Sure. But I'm just saying this amendment as drafted doesn't do that. That's why I'm raising the issue. It's really just some practical concerns. And I guess what I would prefer, but it's obviously your discretion, is that we have some time to talk to those kinds of issues that we address them next cycle, just with respect to this matter. I understand the major package needs to go through. I encourage you to adopt the entire package. Just some of these issues. I don't know that we're going to resolve the county checkers, kind of board issue, getting with satisfaction. These practical ones are the first.
Sylvester,
yeah, and I did talk to Mr. Gray before. I agree with, that approach. I actually have no problem with the 10,000 small claim stuff. If we want to just remove this amendment at this time and agree to continue to work on this, that might be a solution. Because I don't think I'm going to be able to satisfy the concerns of Corp Counsel. I don't like what they've drafted, so actually we're better off just leaving the language we currently have, which is unfortunate as the word review is, in my opinion, and trying to reach an agreement that everyone thinks is reasonable. So I'm willing to do that if the committee thinks that that's the appropriate way to proceed.
Supervisor, watch
out. I think that's fine, but I think we should have a new amendment drafted then for board day and then take action on board day to amend this section. So it shouldn't have to wait another cycle to put the appropriate language. I'm open to crafting something on board day.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that Supervisor Juris would like to draw an amendment.
Spend
the next 2 weeks crafting.
Do you want?
I was about to say such.
I'll withdraw. Yeah. And so we're going to try to work this out before board days.
Yeah.
I may have to retain separate legal counsel to get this done.
Oh, I think you're doing quite all right for yourself.
It wouldn't be
as lively.
It wouldn't be as lively as Vice Chairman Jersey wouldn't be as lively as.
No, I don't agree with his opinion.
You make it lively.
Right. I'm glad I'm fit for something. I'll tell my husband you said so.
Amendment 2 is withdrawn.
Mr. Chairman, there is new language in the main package to this section. On line, bottom of line, let's see here. Mine is 827, but I'm not sure. 888. That increases the Judiciary Committee's authority from 7 to 10 miles. Currently 5.
Yes, and I'm totally in agreement with that amount and so on. I mean, I did look at the small claims statute, and there's a breakdown between 10 and 5, but I think for the board, the 10,000 is very reasonable without special.
So, Amendment 2 is withdrawn. Given reference to the duties and responsibilities of the Committee on Judiciary Safety and Human Service, purchase of surety bonds, would that be on the finance audit?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I believe the reason that it's here, there could be an argument maybe in place, but you have insurance here. Surety bonds are more like insurance than general obligation bonds.
Okay. That's fine. I just got the grace. Okay, let's go to Amendment 3.
Mr. Chairman, prior to taking up each amendment, I'll give you corrected lines first.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
According to your packet, number 3 begins on line 78.
Well, really, the question on this one is whether we want the Committee on Intergovernmental Relations, which for the most part deals with pending legislation. And a lot of times our response to that, whether we want that to be taken up by the chairperson of the board, the vice chair, second vice chair, and standing committee chairs. I guess we had gotten away from that practice, Mr. Cooley, and we were no longer basically following the ordinance. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, this is one particular area where appointments were made to this committee that were not consistent with what was in the ordinance. Yes. And I think that the change was recommended here for a couple of reasons. One is to give that flexibility that in practice has already been used at sometimes, but also to just identify four standing committee chairs as being an IGR. Intergovernmental relations deals mostly with state legislation. There are certain committees of the county board which oversee policy areas which are likely the subject of state legislation, but there are other committees that are much less involved. So just generically saying four chairs, you could theoretically end up with the chairs of four committees that are not Health and Human Services, Public Works, Judiciary and Safety, which, you know, are really kind of some of the major areas that, you know, that you would see changes in state law that affect us.
Right. And I had originally went this route to also address final offers. And there's a different solution that we've kind of got to on final offers. So I'll actually withdraw this motion unless someone feel strongly about it.
I feel strongly about it. I feel strongly, since I've been here, we have not used this format, but I feel strongly in as much as legislation from the state, it drives so much whether or not we're going to receive dollars that we would get a hold of them.
we get a lot of dollars in the state. The federal government does provide us with revenue directly, but more through the state. And since the state, since sometimes the state legislature looks at us as the state of Milwaukee, I think that it'd be important for the chair, the first vice chairs, and those committee persons to be, in a sense, a committee of a committee. And because legislation, each committee deals with legislation, deals with matters that involve the state, I think that it would be proven and important to have that we would stick to actually how the committee was structured. Again, you got the chair, you got the first vice chairs, you've got chairs of committees, and as it relates to our intergovernmental relations department, or even the chairman and the staff, I think with having those people on that committee, it really facilitates getting things done. Because the chairman of those of committees really knows what's going on as it relates to the committee. That's not to say that a committee member is not aware of what's going on, but I'm saying most items, all items are come to that individual, and I think it helps us be more cohesive as it relates to what we need to do in order to make our views known at the state of Wisconsin. So that's my take.
Yes, yeah, and I suppose if we go back and don't change this, and just leave it seven members, then it basically starts to become a standing committee, and they're meeting every month. And I don't think that was necessarily.
I would say this: the committee itself does not meet every month, but when it does meet, there are very important items for that committee.
Right, I agree.
And when those committee members meet, they deal with something that is crucial as it relates to response, as it relates to initiating actions or following through on actions. And so I have a problem. I personally would have a problem with the committee being as needed. But I'm just saying, as it relates to providing information in order to come up with information, in effect, you have one committee clerk, but with this structure, you have a number of committee clerks so that information can be massage, create, massage, respond to as related to what comes from the state of Wisconsin. That's my take.
Yeah, I was agreeing with you because I think if you leave the leadership of the board on that, they will not be likely to be calling meetings all the time because committee chairs are very, very involved and have plenty of work to do, as is the chairperson of the board. Whereas if you just leave it for seven members, perhaps just to give a member another chairmanship, I mean, I think sometimes that's the way it was starting to look, that we needed a chairmanship to give to someone, so this became the committee, and then all of a sudden it starts meeting all the time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on the committee is a fill-in committee. Okay. Somebody needs to go somewhere, so let's go behind you.
Mr. Chairman, I think your points are legitimate points. Process, kind of technical thing I would just point out is that quite often your first vice chair, your second vice chair are also chairs of committees. You're also having, under this amendment, four other people who are chairs of committees, plus the chairman of the board. If the chairman of the board chooses not to make themselves the chairman of this committee because of their other workload or whatever, you will have somebody who's the chair of two standing committees. Just, there's nothing wrong with that. Just that you know that there's a very good likelihood under this amendment that somebody on the board will end up chairing two standing committees of the county board, intergovernmental relations and another committee.
Mr. Cooley, my response is, I would hope that wouldn't happen. I would hope that the chair would chair of the committee, the chairperson of the board would chair of the committee. But even with that, I think as it relates to facilitating the business of the county board, I think that the structure would work better. It would better serve the board than the
What makes me uncomfortable here is the discretion and flexibilities that this takes from the county board chair. because it doesn't permit that person to consider the skill sets and the expertise of various members. It prescribes blindly assignments to a committee when you may have someone who has tremendous expertise who may not be a chairman and who would be a valuable contribution to that committee. And it essentially disallows that. So I have a bad problem with this, and I think that that problem is enough to cause me not to support it. Well, did you withdraw?
I
thought you backed off.
Well,
it's going to be up to the chair, I think, to put it back up.
I will, if I may, put my name down as offering to accept it. Don't accept it. It's yes, I just wanted to. I just want. That's my belief with respect to. I think that this committee is very important given the interactions that we have between Madison and supporting that such a committee. And I appreciate what Supervisor Broderick has said, but in the past, I've seen the committee as a filling committee that. All the other assignments are taken. That's very rare that I've seen where somebody really wanted to be on this committee because of their experience, because of their previous position, I should say. It's more of a set of feelings.
Let me offer an example.
Go ahead.
Should Dave Cullen be elected in the coming election? He brings 20 years of legislative experience. He has contacts in Madison, but he might not be a board chair. And that would disallow us using those skill sets or those of others with similar kinds of qualifications. And I just think that's a limiting factor that is too limiting.
To suggest, to understand what you're telling me, I would change first vice chairperson, first vice chair, second vice chair, and two standing committee chairs. I would change that from four to two. Give us some flexibility.
You have to add two additional board members?
Yeah. Yes. Supervisor Brennan.
Thank you, Jim. Applaud Supervisor Brodnick for bringing that up because I had, in my previous job, I was a state lobbyist. So I was pretty, intricate since past 2009, 2011, state budget. And that's a committee I would love to have started on to give an opportunity for my expertise on state issues. That's about the point. So I have county board members who have those skill sets and interests on the governing committee.
And that's part of the change.
Not that thing was good.
Do you still want two standing committee chairs that are not also serving as first or second? That should stay.
Mr. Chair,
I'm just
referring
to one of
the others as co-sponsors. We're substituting the other J. It's going to be the Johnson Amendment.
Okay.
Sure.
That's the next one.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's always been Johnson Jersey.
I move approval.
Supervisor Johnson.
I move approval of amendment number 17.
Supervisor Johnson moves approval of the Johnson Amendment. Any further discussion? And just for clarity, Madam Clerk, do you want to read? Why don't you read the whole? Do you have it? Can you read the whole amendment the way it's been changed?
Amend the proposed ordinance beginning on line
77, Chapter 1.11, Sub 8.8, to restore and amend existing language as follows. Committee on Intergovernmental Relations, 7 members consisting of the chairperson of the county board, the vice chair, the second vice chair, and 2 standing committee chairs that are not also serving as first or second vice chair, plus 2 additional members.
Any questions? I think the numbers in the beginning line, those numbers have changed.
780.
What is it, 780? 780. All right, if there's no further discussion, Supervisor Sitars.
Does it need to say board members instead of members? Members is...
Consistent, Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chairman, excuse me. Consistent throughout Chapter 1, the term members means county board members.
Thank you for that clarification.
Right. Anything else from the committee? Clerk, please call the roll.
On the approval of Amendment Number 17, Supervisors Johnson.
Aye.
Wyshon.
Aye.
Caesars.
No.
Broderick.
Aye.
Biddle.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
5 aye, 1 no.
Thank you very much.
Amendment number 5.
Refers to page 20, line 991, chapter 1.11.
You said 996?
Yeah, my concern in removing the language, I was concerned that we now did not have the language that the board approved leases, and I was concerned that it was not only land leases, it was facility and land leases. And I met with Mr. Session, and I think Mr. Session agreed with me that that was nowhere else in the ordinances. Am I speaking correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I believe you were referencing, for instance, the county partition properties, but currently owns, for instance, the Cogsville that we need a lease out for the Cogsville D.C. There wasn't a place for the federal.
Right, so I felt it was important that we retain the language. Mr. Session did point out that, the current practice is, for example, if we do a facility rental in the Parks Department, that would probably be appropriately heard in the Parks Committee, correct? So what I would like to suggest is that we keep approves all facility and land leases except those matters pertaining to parks, which would be heard by the Parks Committee.
Would you repeat that, Supervisor Jersey?
I said,
except
those matters pertaining to parkland, would I say? Or to park? To parklands? To parklands, which would be heard by the Parks Committee. I could ask the chairman of the Parks Committee if that is something that he agrees with.
Could you, by the Committee on Parks?
Yes, it is.
Supervisor, so with respect to Parks Committee, the Committee on Parks, Department 2777, that was all.
Supervisor Wyshon?
Hey, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, I just wanted to clarify. I can understand, okay, this is public works transit approval of facility leases that may come before that facility set there. They oversee
But can someone explain to me how this would affect things like economic development and on the grounds and things like that? Because there's a big difference between leases of that nature and what we declare a surplus property.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, under assignments to the Committee on Economic and Community Development, sub 1, it does envision that those types of items still be properly in front of that committee. The amendment as presented would require the TPW committee to also be in front. So it would be in front of the parent committee as well as.
Well, that's my question on that. You know, how many redos or double takes do you want to do on an item that you have at least before economic development or something at county grounds, and why should that have to go before transportation public works? The fact is, if everybody just stays in their lane, my stuff that parks deals with parks leases and parks facilities and public works deals with leases and public works facilities and economic development deals with other things rather than things being duplicated.
My concern was, I mean, first of all, this is not just the county grounds. This is facility and land leases. My understanding of reading the ordinances, there was nothing in the ordinances that would say Department of Public Works should review leases. And I think we want to get something in our ordinances to make sure that it's reviewed by the board. And I saw no reason just to say county grounds. We should be having someone, and if you want to try to correct it in another way, then I'm fine with that. But I want to make sure that it's clear the board reviews facility and land leases. Now, with regard to all of those, you know, issues that the Parks Department deals with, it's not intended to get the Department of Public Works involved with all of that. Keep that in Parks. But with regard to the issue of leases, it seems that the Department of Public Works, for the most part, hears those in any event. Economic development, I suppose sometimes you do those very long-term leases that in effect become a, in effect, conveyance because it's so long-term. I don't want to think this to death, but if there was no place else in the statutes or in the ordinances, if we took out approves all common ground land leases, which is what number 8 currently says, and then we don't have anything that addresses approves leases. So that's what I was trying to get at here, and if you've got some better language, I'm willing to hear it.
Well, we addressed the issue just it by default it set up the chair to refer to the, whatever it feels to be appropriate committee because only the county board can enter into a contract. So it's not like the matter isn't heard. And what we're doing is just laying out, you're setting the path for where things go. And what I don't want to get into is that we overload committee agendas by hearing things twice. And you're basically then having, especially with only 18 members on the county board, you're going to have two-thirds of the board vote on an item before you county board meeting. So you're pretty much making irrelevant the county board a vote. So here, I just don't see the need for doubling up on things. And if there is a lease that affects the Parks Department, it should be heard in Parks that there's a lease that... So if we could have something more specific to that, that would be fine. I just don't think every lease we enter into needs to be heard at Public Works.
Right, I'd agree.
So my question, I guess, to the committee is how do we keep everybody in the right lane and the correct language for that?
Mr. Green?
Just a suggestion for consideration just off the top of my head. You do have things like ECB or parks. So the way you could write this, if you want to catch all of these, approves all facility and land leases that are not referred by the chairman to a different state.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Whether you want to strike the previous?
I'm going to strike the previous language and adopt the language of Mr. Grady.
Mr. Grady, would you read from there so I start to get?
Number 8 approves all facility and land leases that are not referred. Chairman or chairperson?
Just referred.
They are not referred to under standard.
Yes. Right now.
So that would be proposed out facility amendments that are not referred to another standing committee. Or did you want to put in
just takes care of the parks discussion.
That's great.
It also covers an issue that resolves an issue that sitting here thinking about saying no the answer to this. I believe
no, before you're supposed to be here in the first place.
Somewhere, either in the ordinance of the statute or department standard, and the leases of less than 1 year. So, to be consistent with that, this proposal would also be consistent.
Okay, so the amendment is approves all facility and land leases that are not referred to another standing committee. That's it. All the line out of that is to be disregarded.
That was never part of that. The only thing that mine did was to remove the numbering. It wasn't supposed to be crossed out.
Okay. Any further discussion on amendment number 5? Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Who made the motion?
On amendment number 5, Supervisor Jurczyk?
Aye.
Wyshon?
Aye.
Cesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Chairman number 6, from Supervisor Jurczyk, Chapter 1.13(c), which is final page 2 by 1096.
Thank you. Number 6. And the supervisor adds, if you read that, Madam Clerk, starting with the committee.
Committee chairpersons must schedule a properly referred item within a maximum of 2 regular county board committee cycles. Once scheduled and publicly noticed, an item may only be withdrawn according to the provisions of 1.13(d)(b). If the item is withdrawn by the sole action of the committee chair pursuant to 1.13(d)(b), the item must be placed on the committee agenda for the next regularly scheduled meeting and may not be withdrawn again.
Thank you. 1.13(d)(8) relates to once a committee comes to order and the chairman is taken to establish a quorum. Any item on the agenda can only be removed by concurrence of the majority of the committee prior to the committee coming to order, and it can be removed by the chairperson. Comments, questions, discussions?
Mr. Chair, motion to approve the number 5 member of the chair.
Or this is Supervisor Jurczyk. Thank you.
I'm looking at amendment number 6, and it's not the same language that I think we just read.
You got the whole first.
Okay. Did she change it? Did Dimitri ever change it?
Yes. She said she was.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
that's your comment.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair. Supervisor
Brown. It strikes me in the first portion of it that you read, and I don't have a line reference here, I'm sorry, but at the bottom of the bold paragraph, scheduled meeting and may not be withdrawn again. it would seem to me that it might be wise to add except by a majority vote of the committee. There may be special circumstances under which it would be appropriate to withdraw it again if the majority of the committee agreed.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think the that's actually covered here in this language, because under 113D8, an item can be withdrawn two ways. One, by the chairman of the committee before the committee starts, or two, by a majority of the committee once the committee convenes. If the item is withdrawn by the chair before the committee starts, then it must be placed on the next agenda. If it is withdrawn by a majority of the committee, that does not happen. So that's how the amendment addresses that particular issue.
Thanks for that clarification. But that answers my
thank you, sir. Supervisor Weishaupt. Supervisor Weishaupt will take amendment number 6. Any further discussion? Questions?
Just taking a minute to read it.
That's fine. That's a question. That's a reference to 113.8 or something.
It's the answer.
There's a, no, the time. What I'm saying is I read what's in there. Once a committee comes to order, the attendance is taken to establish a quorum. Any item on the agenda can only be ruled by a concurrence of the majority of the committee. Prior to the committee coming to order, an item may be removed by the chairperson. That's what 113 subsection B subsection A states.
Surprising. I'm glad to see that as well. Surprising. Question for Mr. Cooley. There was in current rules the ability for any item that's not scheduled on a majority of any committee that it could be scheduled. Is that still retained in the current set of rules?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, yes, there's another provision, and I forget exactly, in Chapter 1, in which a majority of a committee can sign a petition to have a meeting to discuss an item that a committee chair did not put on the agenda. And, of course, there's always the serving notice at the board level of pulling items from committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Madam Clerk? Amendment number 6.
On the approval of Amendment number 6, Supervisors Jurczyk?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Caesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chan?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. Do you need discussion?
Item number 7 is now withdrawn. Item number 8.
Amendment from Supervisor Schultz and Mr. Jurczyk. Section 1.9 on page 12, line 5, that's what that begins. The amendment includes one word, that's the word legal, prior to the word core. So, essentially, every ordinance presented to the county board shall be approved as to legal form of corporation powers of private and supervised powers.
Thank you, Supervisor Weishaupt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we just have court counsel give us their definition of legal form and what that means for how it would apply to
Chairman?
That's great.
Yes, dude. From my perspective, talking about this, this is what we are doing now. This is basically a clear what we are doing now is look at an ordinance to make sure that it sort of has magic words in it, especially ordinance, but it's not resolution so much as ordinance. Have the language required by statute that says the county board does hereby ordain. Beyond that, it's not much.
Just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. it is a terrible
make sure something the planning board has important to do with
Mr. Chairman, a technical comment on this. The ordinance in front of you has ordinance in it in two locations. Originally had been struck, and then we removed that striking. This amendment still has the struck language, so it really should be every resolution or ordinance presented. That language should not be struck as reflected in the amendment.
Okay.
And that's on the first line and the third line of the amendment.
Okay. So, when the ordinance was struck on lines 1 and 3, those strikes would be
approval, Mr.
Chairman. Supervisor Cesar's moves approval of amendment to revise Amendment 8. Any further questions? Discussion?
Just so I'm on the same page. Basically, what we're saying as to legal form is that corp counsel doesn't weigh in on the substance of the issue. They weigh in only on the proper legal language to effectuate what the supervisor is trying to do substantively. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Saying no.
On approval of revised amendment number 8, Supervisors Jurcic?
Aye.
Weishan?
Aye.
Cesar?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Item number 9 is
Chairman, Chair, refers to Chapter 1.11, sub C, sub 2, which relates to the Committee on Finance and Audit, if you find it on page 17, line 17. And this would strike the inclusion of Department of Human Resources and Divisions of Employee Benefits and Labor Relations. Of being under the Departmental Policy Purview of the Finance and Audit Committee. That item was redundant, I guess, to what the first document was for.
And would put an undue burden on the Finance and Audit Committee. Man.
So the Department of Human Resources, the Division of Employment Benefits and Labor Relations. And the Department of Administrative Services and the substitute for the Department of Administration.
Correct.
Move approval. Supervisor Broderick moves approval. So areas under the purview of the Personnel Committee are under personnel.
Comments?
The only concern I have, Mr. Session and I had a conversation about the final offers again, and final offers were approved by Finance Committee as to the fiscal note. We're not endangering that with removing this language, are we?
Correct. Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, Chapter 80 of our ordinances applies to collective bargaining procedures and provides that the Finance Audit Committee reviews the fiscal effect of any collective bargaining agreement. Now, as Supervisor Jurcic and I discussed, there is no provision in the ordinances right now for any review of any proposed final offer through arbitration. Distinction that we should probably address in the Supervisor and I have talked about addressing that in the future. Probably.
So this does not endanger that? Okay. That's one.
This is not remote responsibility.
No.
Of the committee to review fiscal notes. But there is specification with respect to areas of Department of Policy, except for what was struck for 3-8. seeing, it appears that there is somewhere, some more discussion on this particular amendment. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
On the approval of amendment number 10, Supervisor Jurczyk?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Cesar?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Amendment number 11.
Amendment number 11 refers to chapter 1.09, sub G1 and sub G5. It's found on pages 14 and 15, 663, which I find 708. The county court provided some suggested language there, but I'm not going to discuss that, but I do want to make sure this point out in the amendment that's in front of you, that I think it's properly highlighted here. The amendment would strike sub G, would strike the last sentence, citations may be issued during any cycle or during any interim period of the board, citations are issued without formal approval by a vote of the board. That would be struck. And then under sub 5, the last sentence would be added. The chairperson shall have prepared a list of citations with sponsored names for action at the next meeting of the board. The preceding paragraphs, or sorry, sentences that are shown in red in the amendment would be struck. Clear, but.
Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Broderick.
Perhaps Supervisor Jurczyk could just summarize the difference between this and current practice. Or Mr. Cooley, or sorry.
Essentially what the revision does is clarify the citation process, but retains the vote on all citations by the county board. So the streamlines the process. What the original revision did was streamline the citation process, would basically say that if the county board chair approved the citation, it was considered approved by the full board. Some members said that they thought it was appropriate that the full board should continue to vote on citations. So this essentially restores the vote of the full county board on all citations, but still streamlines the process of getting that citation prepared and to the board.
Okay, I was one of those, I think, who raised some concern. It seemed in its early reform to have taken away the significance of the citation to some great degree.
So because you and others raised that concern that this isn't the response to them.
And I thank you for that, sir.
Supervisor Jurczyk?
Well, I think Mr. Sarnetsky pretty much summed it up. I think the last sentence returns what everyone was concerned about, but simplifies the process. So I'll move approval.
I remind us we have 14 minutes. Any other comments, concerns? Madam Clerk, on amendment number 11.
On the approval of amendment number 11, Supervisor Jurczyk?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Cesar?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Item number 12.
Mr. Chairman, for amendment number 12, I direct your attention to pages 9 and 10, 4950, related to chapter 1.07. At the Committee of the Whole, there was discussion regarding seconding the motions.
We don't have time for this.
Since we only have 14 minutes. Briefly, Mr. Chairman and members, what this does is codify current practice before committees and boards. And board.
Move to.
Supervisor Broderick, is approval. Comments, questions, concerns?
Mr.
Not necessary.
Madam Clerk, please call roll on amendment.
On the approval of amendment number 12, Supervisors Joseph.
Aye.
Weichand.
Aye.
Caesars.
Aye.
Broderick.
Aye.
Biddle.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Amendment 13.
Mr. Chairman, Amendment 13, you can find on page 3, line 103, but also by Supervisor Mason, Supervisor Caesar, just goes off the side as well.
Supervisor Caesar?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This deletes the language, August will not have a regularly scheduled meeting of the county board, giving the board chair the ability to schedule one he or she so chooses, without drawing the public ire to the fact that, look at those people, they're not working in August. However right or wrong that interpretation is from the community, it's just one less open can of gas that I think Supervisor Rice wanted to have available to some who would say that's not a really good thing, having that length of time. So whether it's of merit, I can support it, and I think there is merit. I think that you join us in deleting that. Let the chairperson, he or she, choose to schedule meetings on the dates and call special meetings when and where required. So, Mr. Chairman, I move for approval.
Supervisor, she's her husband, Amendment 13.
Any questions?
Concerns? Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
On the approval of Amendment 13, Supervisors Jurczyk?
No.
Weichand?
No.
Caesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
No.
Biddle?
No, there's Supervisor Rice and Biddle, but aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
3 ayes, 3 noes. The amendment fails.
Item number, amendment number 14, yes.
Chair, amendment number 14 addresses two issues. The first is Sanctions proposed. This incorporates some of the comments that were made by the Office of Corporation Counsel with response to the Committee of the Whole. The second portion of Amendment 14 also relates to the comments made by the Corporation Counsel related to approval of claims against the county with payments of over $500 as authorized under statutes. That's the product 18, 9, 7.
Now, this says, respect to the first part, a member wishing to abstain may make a verbal statement for his reason. I think, personally, to protect myself, I would give a reason. Maybe it's not the one who is corporate counsel's indicating that there. Because I've seen something today, yesterday, that personally, that will give a reason.
I will give a
reason. It's up to the member.
You're a good man.
Up to the member. And for number, for the second part, Corporation Counsel has delegated the authority to approve the payment of claims against the county with payments of more than $500. Anyone have a question, any concern? Concern about that? Ms. Craig?
Briefly comment. In fact, we've been doing this for decades without issued ordinance.
Okay.
More
just want to comment. Supervisor Weichand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the abstention part, what is, says, except by specific notice of that supervisor? Is that just when your name is called?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, the reason that is in there is so that the most important change in this section was removing the requirement that the body allow a person to abstain, because a person should be able to abstain if they feel, you know, that's appropriate. Secondly, though, what this does is it requires a supervisor to, you know, when they ask for separate action on that item, to say, I plan on abstaining on this item. They don't have to say anything else, but that gives a heads up to the board itself, so that the board doesn't find out during the roll call. So the reason that the language specific notice of that supervisor is in there is to have that happen, so that it's if your name starts with a Z and you know everybody's gone through the alphabet, and at the end we find out one member has abstained. So it doesn't prevent them from abstaining. It doesn't require them to say why they're abstaining. It just requires that they state before the roll call that they are abstaining.
Okay, so if we do the roll call and somebody doesn't, we have to sort of redo it, and then they have to go through the motions of making the notice that they're going to abstain, or...
I would recommend you probably purge the vote and re-vote on it. I don't know what the county clerk has to say.
Yeah, you would only do that if someone raised a point of order that the person did not serve notice. Otherwise, the roll call would stand.
Okay. I can kind of understand why in the past where they said you had to vote on stuff, because, say, on a veto where you need two-thirds or anything like a fund transfer, things like that, where somebody then abstains, and then since we have been reducing the size of the board and things like that, where you could, you know, you didn't vote against and you didn't vote for it, it could affect that vote on that. Just kind of explain that a little bit.
So Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, currently a supervisor could get around, if you put in some requirement like that, by just taking a walk out of the
right.
room. Yeah. You know, so you're not going to prevent somebody, or you're not going to force somebody to vote on something who doesn't want to vote on it. This just makes it a little more transparent that that's what they're doing.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, generally in parliamentary law, it's generally understood that a legislative body may not compel a member to vote or not to vote on a measure, or that is that member's right to exercise his or her vote as he or she sees fit, and that the body may not compel them to vote in a certain way or to not cast a vote or to cast a vote.
Okay. Thank you.
Sebastian's done.
Supervisor Rice's statement at the last discussion that it's implied that you would be expected to vote on every item unless you were compelled because of a conflict. And that basically was what he was looking for. You shouldn't be forced. You should be allowed to not vote and abstain when you determine that you would have a conflict. So that's in his viewpoint. This is the introduce for this item. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, I move approval for Amendment 14.
Further discussion on Amendment 14, Supervisor.
I don't understand why we don't say that, because I've tried to think through this. I mean, I believe the only reason to abstain from voting is when you have a conflict, period. You should be voting on everything else. This idea of may state a reason, not state a reason. I mean, it seems to me that you could write this, a member may ask to be excused from voting when the member has a conflict of interest. And if so, then abstains. Something like that. I mean, where else would you have an opportunity to not vote?
Mr. Chair, it seems clear there's a big difference between should and must vote. And the fact is that our county clerk has just outlined the fact that taking a walk is a practice that is acceptable in most legislative bodies.
Well, it reminds me of G. Gordon Liddy when he was when he was called before the Nixon hearings. He refused to take the oath, and from then on, nobody could ask him questions because they didn't know if he'd be telling the truth or not. I mean, you know, I suppose you could carry that to extremes. We do have an obligation, for example, as elected officials, to be here and take up the people's business. You do have a sergeant at arms. I don't know, could you go chase the sergeant at arms to the member that left the floor and tell him to come back and do the law? I mean, it's just, I don't want to get this to carry to extremes, but.
The obligation of elected officials is to the elected and to no one else. And so, you know, if you don't attend any meeting, if you get elected, you stay home for the next 4 years, nobody can do anything about that except the voters by either recalling you or not reelecting. As far as I'm concerned, I think that's as far as I'm concerned. Just think of the reasons. I'm not talking about shoulds. I'm talking about legal obligation. I mean, obviously, I think everybody should take their oath of office seriously and their election seriously. But I don't think more than like most people go on other elected officials. So it's a little bit of a verge of legal opinion and personal opinions.
Well, that's honest. I mean, do you agree, really? I mean, what other than a conflict of interest, why would you not vote other than you're chicken and you leave the room? I mean, a real reason not to vote is going to be a conflict of interest. Well, I guess we could say, you know, if someone chooses, since we're using May, if someone chooses not to make a statement, we'll all understand the reason you're not voting is a conflict of interest.
Or you're a chicken.
Or you're pulling a G. Gordon Liddy. I don't know. Anyway, but we don't have to beat this to death. I can vote for it the way it is.
Okay. So, do I see those as Ms. Vogel? The
approval of Amendment 14, Supervisors Jurcik?
Aye.
Weishan?
Aye.
Cesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes.
Chairman, Rule Number 15 comes out of the Committee of the Whole, where supervisors raise issues related to clarity regarding 1.18. And I believe the question arose about the use of the word reconsider throughout 1.2.4.5. So those are considered those technical amendments. Those are disposal of the supervisor expansion of the current. The first portion of this amendment can be found on page 28, lines 13 through 2. And again, it relates to the word business. Right. Just go half of 4.5. So we'll fix that. And with the second part, relates to executive budget vetoes, but we have the word reconsider, which should instead say consider. So we should start the card 5 times.
Okay. It's actually applied in the article, so that was in your copy of it. I thought I took off the these.
Point diverged. Mr. Chairman, I think actually you can consider these scrapers versions.
Consider what?
What are called Scrivener's corrections or just technical corrections. I think, frankly, the kind of sense of concordance, which we haven't really made upon us all.
Okay. So that's wrong?
No, it's just less of an objection. Okay, move it.
Just clean it up.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Jerry.
Supervisor Broderick moves approval of Amendment 15 as a screening error. Madam Clerk. Amendment 15.
On the approval of Amendment 15, Supervisors Jurcik?
Aye.
Weishan?
Aye.
Cesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Wright? Biddle.
Aye.
Mr. Chair. Six ayes, zero noes.
And the last one is number 16.
Chairman, the number 16 can be found on references letters that can be found on page 28, line 15, and chapter 1.1.
The presentation of communications that was published in the official procedure. Is not a member of the committee.
It's how position to the supervisor. Those two committees indicated that he was concerned about transparency, but Kendra, that not all items that were referred to committees or that had not been referred to committees were properly reflected. It's clarified where all items can be found.
Is the matter going to be on Mr. Sessions?
Yep. If I may, Mr. Chairman, there was some confusion on what placing on the agenda meant, and this clarifies it, that it is actually referred. Mr. Chairman, this also came out of the subject matter that is part of this section of the ordinance in which what happens if a chair does not refer an item, and it automatically goes on the docket, you know, technically for referral at the next cycle. And what does that mean in terms of going on the docket in this? In addition to clarifying where referrals are reflected, it kind of addresses that as well. So in a way it's a technical correction, but it also addresses that overall issue.
That's a
good
question.
Thank you, sir.
I'll move
approval amendment number 16.
There's a question. Moves approval amendment number 16. Questions, concerns? Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
On the approval of Amendment 16, Supervisor Sturcis?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Cesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Six ayes, zero noes.
And on Chapter 1, pass the amendment.
Moves approval.
Supervisor Sturcis, moves approval. Any questions, concerns on the may have missed? Now see.
We're still going to do one. Amendment 2. So how do you want me to handle the motion?
No.
That's it.
We'll see it.
Yes, sir.
Madam Clerk, Chapter 1 as amended.
On the approval of Chapter 1 as amended, Supervisor Sturcis?
Aye.
Weishaupt?
Aye.
Cesars?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Biddle?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Six ayes, zero noes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee. It's been a long time coming. I also want to tell you as our boss that I think Ms. Jensen has had a great start to her career as a committee clerk.
Yes, sir. Earlier in the day, I kind of zipped through some things before I realized I should slow down.
I was wondering how we were going to haze her. I thought this was perfect. but the whole ordinance thing.
Her boss is sitting next to her.
No, Carol, don't you think this was a good hazing?
Meeting adjourned.
Yes, right. Meeting is now.
We should thank Mr. Kelly.